From TMP to TTNG, for sure the cure and those tired meme jeans, Hella Kinsella and the promise ring, sunny day real estate and rights this spring, Prince Twinkle Daddy's help keep the dream alive. I constantly thank God for Algernon and Remo Christie Front Drive, Mineral Snowing High Tide Hotelier and more. Rio Limo only consists of the DC Emotive Hardcore.
Like a proper intro here, that this is episode 25 of the E-Word. It's the first of our A Decade Under the Influence series, in which we put together a poll of records from each year. We start with 2010, and the winning record of that year is Snowing with I Could Do Whatever I Wanted If I Wanted. And we have everyone from that record, from Snowing, on this podcast right now, and that's unbelievable to me. This is Kyle. I'm in Madison. Ellie, you're here as well in Austin. And yeah, we have Ross, Nate, John, and Justin split between two different coasts. So we're in all three time zones right now, or we're in three different time zones right now. But Snowing.
I mean, mountain time doesn't exist.
True. I don't think we've had a mountain time guest yet. But Snowing, thank you for being on this episode. This is wild.
Thank you.
Where's Mountain Time?
Arizona.
So we're going to be talking about the record to kind of get into it. So we were just talking before we officially started here that there wasn't really an official date that this came out, but we determined that it was December 4th of 2010.
I believe so. That's let's call it that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me.
And when this came out, does this mean it was literally a free download somewhere?
Yep.
Yeah, so we put it on the website. I think it was a Mediafire link, yeah. Right? And I think we just had a PayPal donate button.
Right.
Which is right. Pretty wild to think that was done.
That's very Jeff Rosenstock of y'all.
Did we do that before he did it?
No, he didn't.
Did we beat Radiohead? No, Radiohead did it too, I think.
Radiohead was the template in a way because they did their own website with it. Mm. So that's why I was like, we should do our own website. This won't crash at all. It immediately crashed. It crashed the first, 3 hours. We crashed the fucking website.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't afford great web hosting, I'm sure.
Yeah, no.
And so this comes out after the Fuck Your Emotional Bullshit EP. And I was kind of wondering, was there any, hype or momentum behind that release going into this? Were, people looking for the Snowing LP?
There was the hype of we put out that Fuck Your Emotional Bullshit EP, and the response was overwhelmingly, we don't like this as much as Street Smart. I remember that being resoundingly, we don't like this as much as Street Smart. So there was, I don't know, at least for me, a huge chip on my shoulder to make it
better.
Yeah.
The funny thing is that when the record came out, it was the same thing, but
we don't like this as much as the EP.
Which seems to be a common opinion.
Yeah, but what are you gonna do? Fuck them.
Yeah,
that I don't like this as much as Street Smart comment is literally the first thing I ever saw about Snowing.
Yeah.
That was the very first thing.
I think that's the first thing I ever said about Snowing.
I guess I understand why. It was pretty different. Not worlds apart different, but it was definitely louder and more abrasive.
I mean, there was definitely this like air of like studio seriousness. I don't know how else to put it. Going into it, like, we practiced all the songs a ton, and we went in there with this like plan with Joe Reinhart, who is recording it and, let's just say, producing it. And he, I remember this specifically, this one email he sent that was like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this right. Drums are all going to be tuned. Guitars are all going to be set up. We're going to go in there with like knowledge of what amps we want to use, what sounds we want to get. And we were like, oh yeah, we're going to do all of that. And we did. We all talked a lot about all of that legwork. And then we did all of our parts individually. And I don't know that any three of us were in this studio at the same time.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
At most, there were two of us in the studio, and we'd be listening to something someone else did and going, they did what?
Yeah, I think now we could say, like, we'd be in the recording, and you'd listen to something back, and you'd be like, what the fuck?
You're like,
that's the part he plays?
Like, that's how it sounds? Oh, my God.
Huh. Okay.
Like, all right, I guess it makes sense if that's what he's doing.
Just go with it, I guess.
Yeah.
But like
we did demo everything though on an iPhone 3G.
Sure. On an iPhone 3G.
Yeah.
That's right.
Do you think the record sounds like it was recorded with no one in the room at the same time?
Yes.
Yes.
We're getting to this fast.
So when we were recording it around the same time, our friends in 1994 were also recording with Joe, or had done some recording with Joe, and their recording sounded huge and like really powerful, and there were only two of them, so I was like, our recording is going to sound way bigger and way more powerful, and it just
because there's four of us.
Because there's four of us.
It's math.
That's just
basic math.
That's day one.
and it didn't.
What were they recording? What was 1994 recording?
Fuck Your Head, I believe.
No, they did that in Europe on the iPhone.
No, that's Fuck It.
That's Fuck It. Right.
Fuck It, they did in Europe. I think
they did.
Fuck Your Head was at.
I thought it was Most Def.
Most Def.
I didn't know they did anything with Joe. That's cool. Yeah. I should listen to that.
My roommate, Chris Dean, was 1994 and was home.
Fuck is he?
I don't know.
Fuck it. But yeah, I mean, also we tracked it, and yeah, tracking it was a very bizarre experience.
Yeah,
I also played to a click, and I never play to a click, nor was at the time was I
that was
good at playing to a click.
That was in the email as well, that we were like, we're gonna have you play to a click, and everyone was like, yeah, if this is what you're telling us makes a good record, we'll do it.
Yeah.
The drums sound like somebody playing the click for the first time on an actual recording. Say that.
I don't know when to bring this up, so I'll just bring it up now because we're talking about all this stuff about the actual record. At some point while we were mixing, all the vocals got moved like about like 4 or 5 seconds like in the wrong direction.
Oh no.
Joe would like play me a part and be like, is this right? Is this on? This sounds on. And it would be like a millimeter off in one direction, and or like a millisecond off in one direction. And I just couldn't. I'd be like, dude, I don't know. I can't. There's still some vocals when they come in, I'm like, that's not right. Because somehow the entire record got fucked up.
Also, fun fact, mixed, and I don't know if it was mastered, but certainly mixed entirely on iPod headphones. Mixed entirely on iPod headphones.
So at the time, Joe had recorded all the Algernon records, and they all sounded incredible.
Yeah.
So we were like, this is going to be a slam dunk. And we were like really good friends with everyone in Algernon. So it was like, this is going to be so much fun. We're going to have a great time. Record's going to sound super sick. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying.
Sounds best on iPod headphones. If you really want the full experience, you get the 180 gram vinyl. you hook it up to your tube receiver and you pop the iPhone.
specifically iPhone headphones from 2010.
Yeah, none of these earpods. Not that 2019 advanced shit.
No.
Probably like from 2009,
because nobody was getting it. Like, it was 2010, and Joe was like, "Oh, I better get the new headphones."
was Joe cutting you like a deal at that point too, or was it?
Because... Yeah, we got a homie discount.
Yeah, because I feel like 2 years later, Joe was more of a name, he did like a Joyce Manor record like a few years later and stuff, and that's his history and shit.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. We'll never record with him again just because of that.
I mean, I know. Yeah.
Maybe he'll give you the pro discount
again. Yeah, give me the pro discount. I'll give him Toshiba headphones this time.
I remember we had to buy him a case of nice beer. That was part of it.
I don't remember that. Must have not been there.
I think the other part of it was like, I'll do it cheap, but like we kind of have to fit it in where we can time wise.
Oh, it was so definitely scattered.
There was a lot of that's. I think that's part of the reason why we couldn't really be together, because it was kind of like I can come down after work from 8 to 11:30.
Oh yeah, and then there's like a lot of that.
You can come in from then until 2.
There was a lot of like, can I come in and do like 3 guitar parts in an hour? Like
I record. I recorded drums after Sunday brunch. I remember that.
JR was already in that phase of his life.
True.
We were lagging behind. I'm pro brunch now, I think.
I got shit for brunch, having brunch before I recorded at the time. I remember that. I love that.
I think we just made fun of you because none of us could afford to have brunch. Like in the way you're speaking.
Wait, where'd you get brunch?
Yeah, where'd you get brunch?
Probably the Abbey.
Oh, okay.
I got brunch at the Abbey all the time.
And then I start working there, and suddenly I don't see either hide nor tail.
Because I live in California.
Yeah, well, we all have excuses.
So the record comes out on Count Your Lucky Stars and Square of Opposition. Why does it come out on two different labels at that time? Was it both people fronting money for vinyl?
Yeah, I think so.
Chris would have yelled at us if we wouldn't have put it out with him. So.
Yeah.
Reject.
Yeah. We met Keith on the tour, and he really wanted to like do the LP. And when we ran it by Chris, he was like, "Oh yeah, great! Like we'll all do it." And it just made a lot of sense. The way that emo has like took off, where it's like a for some labels now it's like a viable business, or it was for a while like a viable business. It hadn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. So like still very, I think this gets lost a lot. It's like when we were a band, like things were still very DIY. So it was just like we had two friends that ran record labels that wanted to help us put out a record. It just was like, yeah, of course. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. More people on the team. Like, of course. That was it. There was no, like we didn't have contracts.
And I think at the time it was nice to just not have to pay for it. Like that felt
that was
like,
it, yeah.
Like
we paid for the recording.
Yeah.
But, you know, to pay for getting like vinyl press, that's a lot of money.
And I mean, Chris had been putting out records for years, so he had relationships with his pressing plant. And
yeah.
He could get stuff quickly. Like, I don't, it takes so long to get a record made now.
Yep.
We had been talking about that a lot because we have a record coming out in another band. And it's like, hey, if this gets pressed, it'll be a year till this comes out.
Yeah,
but I don't know, back then I don't know, it might take 3 months.
Well yeah,
it wasn't that bad.
A pressing itself would take 3 months.
Now it takes like 9.
Yeah.
Lady Gaga.
Are you familiar with her wait times for pressing?
Yeah, that's why all the big popular vinyl's cool. So like Lady Gaga gets vinyl made, and that's why everything takes forever now.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like basic record store day has fucked up getting records for anyone.
Right.
Has anyone seen A Star Is Born? Because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was great.
I can image. I can. Hold on. Let me do my best.
That sounds like the intro of
a
50s sci-fi movie.
I saw the trailer once. And I'm pretty sure that's about it,
right? Well, she's probably to an EGOT, though.
She's
probably
had her
respect.
Yeah, well,
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to. She just caterwauls in a gas station somewhere. That's what happens. Anyway, scratch that.
It was a good movie.
That was a good movie. Cool. We'll edit it out though.
Okay, so the record comes out.
No usable material.
5-minute podcast.
What is the response when the record comes out?
Good. I think people liked it at the time. We kind of already talked about it. A lot of people were like, yeah, you know, the EP was better.
Where are people talking about it? Because I think Ellie and I looked for reviews and stuff, and I personally could only find punknews.orgs.
Yeah, I remember the only place I saw people talking about it was like Absolute Punk forums and the Last FM, like Twinkle Daddy group.
Last.fm page.
Last FM was huge.
Yeah.
Last FM was like, honestly, the way that like people used it, it's pretty much how like Reddit is used now.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
we were talking about that too. It's like really, and Kyle, also you mentioned that like that was where shows. Like show events happened too. Like,
yep.
That's definitely like something that's kind of lost now. I think Last.fm is definitely more of like a tool than a social media platform.
Right. Well, I don't think it was ever really set up to be like a great social media platform. I just think it was what people had available.
Right. And it was cool because it kind of organically became that. I think sometimes when things use what they're intended to be used for, especially on the internet, those are the things that tend to blow up. I mean, the music tracking was cool. That's still fucking cool.
Yeah.
I wish I still used it. Like, I actually, like, logged into it for the first time in a while because I wanted to go back and, like, kind of look at what I was listening to around then. And I was like, dude, this was cool. Like,
yeah.
I remember, like, posting my top 10 on Facebook for the week.
Oh, yeah. That was always the thing.
Oh, I listened to Hot Snakes 40 times this week.
I was always wildly embarrassed by my Scrabbles.
Yeah. Oh, Scrabble.
Yeah.
The made up words.
Like I get to the end of the week and it was just like it was like that one week where I listened to like the same Cake song 40 times. And I'm like, well, this isn't something I want anyone to know about.
Which Cake song was it?
Dude, there's too many. I couldn't tell you. Actually, I have a playlist on Spotify right now for my friend Tyler that's just called Come On Ty, Cake's Great. I'm just adding songs to it because I'm a cake apologist.
Should go to heaven as a jam.
They're kind of like.
I watched a video of a dog catching an 83-yard frisbee.
Hell yeah!
To he's going the distance.
That's good.
And he catches it right after that. Catches the frisbee. Yeah, that was really good.
I 100% know
90%
of those lyrics.
If you have show notes, can you put that link in there?
I personally can't remember too much of what the online criticisms of the record were, both because I smoke a lot of weed and also because I think I was actively avoiding all that just because I knew it wasn't going to be what I wanted to read or see. And also because, to be honest, the band wasn't like interpersonally doing that great at the time. So any kind of reminder of that was just disheartening.
It was the perfect time to go on a 6-week tour.
It was, it really was.
Well, no, I mean, this was before. This would have been before the winter tour.
Yeah, there was a pretty long stretch because there was a whole...
I mean, Juice, you were already out.
Yeah, that was beginning of August.
Yeah. So,
was that on the tour with it was the tour with Evan.
Yeah, you played like half of the tour, right?
Yes. Yeah, he played until Baltimore.
And then Bean played the rest.
And then Bean played the rest, which was always the plan. The plan wasn't that we were going to split ways, but it just sort of happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the record didn't come out for another couple months because we weren't done. Like, the record took so fucking long to make.
Yeah, that took an eternity. When did we even start recording it? I don't even remember that.
Recording it in the spring of 2009.
I'm currently scrabbling back through the Snowing Facebook to find the post about it.
I looked through my pictures and I have I recorded something at the warehouse in January, but I think that was like way too early that year.
I want to say we started actually tracking the record in the late winter, early spring of 2009, and it was like really done around the late summer, early fall, or maybe it was even done by late summer of 2000. But yeah, for us to have a release date of, or to have put it up December 3rd, 2010, that I think is the most realistic timeline.
So with the discussion of Scrabbles, and just like what people were listening to at the time, I have always been like really curious about blah 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 quote unquote revival, like what those early revival bands were listening to, because I feel like a lot of it gets written off as like Captain Jazz worship, like everyone was just trying to copy Captain Jazz, but I hear like a lot of different stuff happening, and I just want to know what were the specific influences.
No one in this band really listened to emo.
let me just say, I honestly think all of us being against Snowing and whoever else you choose, I think we were all listening to a lot of each other.
Mm.
Yeah, like Algernon was my favorite emo
band. Oh yeah, I listened to some kind of Cadwalder all the time.
I think there was a, I don't know, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I think it's true. Like, there was a big competition to be, unspoken competition to be, like, the best one. And, you know, even though there were, Algernon was, like, far and away the best one.
Yeah.
A lot of the bands, I think, were just sort of unspokenly ambitious to be good. And just write good songs and like have good shit, and that it was emo was kind of incidental, I want to say.
Yeah, it wasn't on purpose playing emo, just kind of happened. It's real strange. Like,
go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, I guess I'll just talk about my relationship to emo. Yeah, I mean, in high school, I probably started listening to it. Braid, Promise Ring. And it was weird at the time to be listening to that because it was over, like,
right.
That for years. So I graduated in 2004. When did Frame and Canvas come out? 2000? Everything I listened to came out in, like, 99, 2000, at the drive-in, Braid, Promise Ring.
I will say, too, pretty much from, like, eighth grade, I listened to whatever Ross told me to listen to. Or, like, pretty much up until this point.
First of all, JR and I have known each other since we were 5 years old. So we like literally
don't scratch that, keep that.
Yeah, keep that. I don't know where I was going with that. Yeah, I don't know. By the time we were in the band, I wasn't listening to a lot of emo. I was already like a boring indie rock man.
No, you were though.
Yeah, we all were, dude.
I think I was.
We all were, dude.
I guess so.
We were all listening to each other's bands, our friends' bands, bands we were playing shows with. We wanted to know, like, oh, is this band good and not good? Are we going to be with, like...
Screamo was still...
Screamo was the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Were y'all into Screamo?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
No.
Definitely.
John Hard, no. Me Hard, yes.
Yeah.
I also noticed that, like the pre-Snowing bands are, like... Like the bands that kind of preceded y'all on the scene, like Make Me or Boy Problems, you know, they were definitely like kind of.
Precede Snowing.
I know the tour demo came out in 2007.
Boy Problems was like,
wow.
I guess while you guys were doing Street Smart, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff was like more screamy and a little bit more hardcore influence, and then. Snowing was abrasive, but not as twinkly.
Here's the thing. I did want to say this just because I need to get this on the record somewhere. Mm-hmm. The emo revival, quote unquote, people credit it to different things. All the credit should go to Dave and John Geeting.
Yeah,
they are two insane brothers who got so deep into the whole of like J Tree emo and also just like. Screamo, because they're both insane, obsessive, compulsive weirdos who are good people who I like very much. But like they started Cyclists because they loved emo so much. And Ross and I ended up joining, and then we ended up getting Nate in the band.
It was really on a whim, too. Originally,
yeah,
it was
on a whim.
It was like, hey, we're all home for the summer. Let's start like a summer fun band.
But then when we did our first tour, which was the only tour I did with the band. We were we played shows, and there were literally no other emo bands. Mm-hmm. We played strictly with screamo bands, and we were like the odd band out on every show, and it was super weird. It felt really uncomfortable. I felt like we were like aliens in a weird way, because like we'd get up and we'd play like our songs where I, you know, they'd play twinkly guitars and I would sing, and like every band after us would get up and do the da 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 da.
Yes.
Who'd y'all play with back then?
I don't remember Street Smart. Like
Line of the North was sick, but the most memorable show from that first Street Smart tour was with Kid Crash.
Oh yeah!
Oh my God!
China. And we'd met them for the first time. There was nobody there. It was some insane abandoned, like it was half barn, half warehouse. And we played there, and it was just a fucking sick place to be. Like seeing Kid Crash back in like 2007 is a very, like, to me, a very special thing. I took mushrooms and listened to that record not like 3 months ago.
Jokes,
and
that's right around Jokes, yeah.
Right around Jokes, yeah.
And so like, peace, Kid Crash.
But also, no one was there.
Mm-hmm.
No. And the next time we played that same spot, maybe 9 months later, Street Smart went back. John had left the band. We had a different singer, and we went back to that same venue and we played, and the place was packed, and it was all.
And then all of our equipment got stolen.
So, but that's neither here nor there. That's not about anything.
I didn't know you guys started again. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun, I think. I don't really remember.
You guys remember the Brooklyn Cat House show?
Yes. Which one?
Which one? That was John's house.
The one where I did.
Boy Problems, and I think Street Smart played. I don't know if John was playing. I think Cody was singing.
Well, there was the one Brooklyn Cat House show where Nate couldn't make it, so I ended up playing bass in the band that I quit while Cody sang, but Cody never actually learned the lyrics.
Never really sing. Don't really know what he sounded like.
So
anyway, we're talking about a different band.
Yeah.
So anyway, Street Smart broke up. And
if we're talking about records, that band didn't even record a record's worth of songs, so we don't get to do a podcast.
Did we want to jump into the track list, Kyle?
For sure.
Song by song? Word.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's start off with I think we're in Minsk. Minsk. I don't know how to pronounce it, actually.
It's Minsk.
Minsk? Okay.
Or no, it's a city.
But they all have funny titles. Maybe we could talk about them.
No. That's, no.
I didn't talk about that one. It's a misquoted Black Books quote.
That's okay. I don't want to talk about it at all. At least we'll talk about the song. I don't care about any of the titles.
Yeah, I'm glad that's over. Unrelated titles and long titles.
Me too. What do you want to ask about the song?
I mean, that trend's back, by the way, but like big time. So I guess first of all, why was this your choice to start off the record?
It's a pretty cold open. Just like you just hear some room mics, really not much at all, and then the super harsh guitar tone comes in that
that is a gnarly guitar tone.
It's incredibly abrasive, the way like rah, rah, very staccato, just really like cuts you into it. And then I don't know,
I think that was the first one we wrote for the record. Well, that was on the tape.
We pre-recorded it for that.
No, first one we wrote for the record was "Why Am I Not Going Underwater." We had written that right after.
Oh, you're right.
We wrote that right after the 7-inch. But going back to Minsk, why we chose that one? I think it's the obvious front runner for to start off the record.
Yeah, pretty much. I remember once we wrote it, I was like, "Well, that's it." In my head, I was like, "That." What else? How else did you start something? You don't. This is it.
And it kind of, that song kind of also like encapsulates a bunch of cool parts of the record just in one song.
Yeah.
Like it's got the noodly stuff. It's got the super abrasive stuff. Mm-hmm. It's got JR's crazy rolling drum parts.
Mm-hmm.
It's got like me and Ross going all over the place. John screaming and singing on it. Like it's a great introductory song for every other song that comes after it.
It's like a thesis statement for the record.
Sure.
For sure.
Is that what you guys were opening up all the shows with too? Because I feel like that's what all I've seen in like the full sets on YouTube and shit was.
We did do that a lot.
I have no answer. I can't remember what we opened up shows with. I was usually drunk or high. some combination of both. I don't know. Yeah, you got to get in the mood.
So was I. But also, yeah, I think that became the pretty predominant opener as we did it. I actually, on the emo subreddit, there was just a post with a show that we did in Santa Monica.
And Minsk is not the first song on that. I listened to it yesterday.
Oh, it's not?
No,
oh, Big Weed is.
No, Underwater is.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, well, never mind.
Well, that was on tour. It was halfway through. We were probably sick of playing the sets.
Right.
And we were mixing things up.
But right. That is true. But yeah, no, I think that was generally the vibe. I do remember the practice where we wrote it. And I remember, like, Nate came in with most, like, that is a Nate song.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he came in with all the riffs, and they were all, I was just like floored by it. And we were writing the song, and I was so excited. And you were so sick.
Like, ill?
Yeah, you were like actually like really sick. And on the ride back to Philly, because we practiced at your mom's house. And on the ride back to Philly.
Oh, is that where I threw up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were actually sick.
And it was like I had a fever and shit.
Yeah. So Nate had this like crazy fever, and we were just like pounding away on the song, and yeah. I just remember thinking like, this is really cool, but then the hypochondriac part in my head was like, I need to get out of this room.
Hell yeah. I completely forgot about that part.
Oh yeah, you were sick as hell.
Yeah,
but also you were sick as hell.
Yeah, so, tight.
Yeah. Track two, Mark Z. Danielewski. I have two things about this. One is that I feel like this song, more than any other, has inspired like so many people to pretend that they have read House of Leaves.
Cool.
And
has everyone
two,
read that?
Oh, fuck no.
Even more than The Fall of Troy. Like, two, this is one of two Snowing songs on this record that I think kind of sounds pop punk. Like, it has like kind of a pop punk part.
Mm-hmm. I always thought this one sounded like it could be on Barry Emergency. Like the Promise Ring.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Emo Poppy.
Song was originally called 127 Pounds of Weed.
Yeah.
because John Weed weighed 127 pounds. And I was sad. I was sad that we didn't keep that name because that was a great name.
Weed wasn't the acceptable thing that it is now in 2019, back in 2010.
It wasn't?
No. It wasn't legal yet anywhere.
It's not really. Never mind.
Well, JR lives in California.
Right? I do not think that's why we changed the name of the song, though.
This is too controversial.
Yeah. We should change it. We might get arrested.
Yeah. Pound? We're going to switch to the metrics.
We didn't play that song like a lot.
No, because it was too hard for me to play.
It hurt my hands.
It was that song that has that solo in it that even when we did those reunion shows, I just kind of said, fuck it, and went with whatever. But I, to this day, I can't replay whatever solo is.
The end?
No, that I can replay.
So my part that is over your part is my least favorite guitar part I wrote in that band.
All right.
I fucking hate it.
Damn.
I fucking hate it so much.
Yeah. No, there's a...
Wait, your part at the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
It's bad.
Yeah. That tuning, it's very easy. That pop punk sentiment that you just talked about, the tuning that I was using at the time, there's one chord shape where it's really easy to get this cool power chord with like this other octave note in there that just sounds huge.
You could slide it around the whole neck.
Yeah, and you really it doesn't, like, you just have to go to the root note, and as long as it's in that shape, it's gonna sound huge. And I think that's maybe the only song on the record where we really utilize that too much, because it does, like, use that sound too much, it's gonna sound a little corny.
I love that song.
I like that song. I like guitar part, but I like it.
Right. I remember when we were writing it, just remember feeling like this was the first time, well, not the first time, but like I felt like we were entering something different. We were doing something that we hadn't done yet, and I remember being really excited about it. I felt like we were writing, like, it just felt different. It felt like we were like progressing as a band, not because it was like a better song, but just because it was like a different song. We were like trying different things together, and I just remember being really like, that was kind of like a cool thing about the record in general, is that I feel like we all had played in emo bands prior, which is a true fact.
Pardon me.
You know, emo bands are like so short-lived, and a lot of times it's like, here's four riffs, we're just gonna play them all in a row, and then that's the song. I feel like Snowing at that point was getting to the point where we were like an actual band that had written more than six songs. So
first
we were
chorus,
like
first chorus.
Yeah, so we were like actually like learning to write together and play together. And it was really it was just a really interesting time. That was like one of the first songs that we wrote like in earnest toward the record. And I remember being really excited by that.
I will say that that riff at the end, I still play it all the time just to warm up. That riff at the end, favorite riff I ever warmed up with.
It's great. A good one.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, on that note, I warm up with Minsk all the time. That's my favorite drum warm up.
We should
the playability. Like some of my musicianship in like during this record was it's the best it's ever been.
Yeah, I've gotten much lazier.
Yeah, dude, I cannot play guitar like I did when we were recording that record. I just can't.
Oh, yeah.
I would have to practice for like 2 hours a day. Because at the time, all I had to do was go to school, smoke weed, and play guitar. And now I have to feel sorry for myself, worry about the future, smoke weed, and go to work.
When we played those reunion shows and I had to relearn the songs, I had a moment where I was like, oh, no. Like, I don't know if I can physically do this anymore.
People ask me if I can finger tap, and I'm like, no, I've never been able to. I don't put my fingernails enough to finger tap. What's the third song?
Malkit.
Malkit,
yeah.
Which is a brand of substitute milk now.
It's real?
Malk? Yeah, Malk is an actual milk substitute now.
Has the Simpsons.
This is a Simpsons Nirvana reference.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Milkit was a Nirvana song, and Malk is a Simpsons joke.
Yep.
And
the only song on the record in standard tuning.
One of two in the entire band.
Wait, on the record?
Yeah.
Only one in standard? Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah. I remember when did you, is that a you riff?
That's a Nate song.
It's a Nate song.
I just remember being like, you were like, yeah, it's in standard. I was like, what? Yeah. even when you play in standard, it doesn't sound like normal guitar. Like when I pick up a guitar and I play in standard, it's like G,
C,
C.
B minor.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Great.
I appreciate that.
That's one of my favorites in the whole band.
Yeah, okay. I love that.
That
song.
Was my favorite to play for
sounds
sure.
Great.
I love that song. That sounds super fun to play.
That's one like if like I need to play that band for like a normal person I know.
Oh,
like, that's like the one. But you might get this one a little bit.
That one's for the normies.
You think this is the most accessible song on the record?
It's up there. Probably that or Mark, right?
I'd say Damn Feathers is the most accessible song.
Yeah, I was going to say Damn Feathers for sure. It's got,
I think Damn Feathers is like pop accessibility is the most accessible one.
Oh, come on.
You bring something now.
No, I love it. Oh, man, Joe walked me through so much cool shit at the end where it gets all like crazy and noisy. He was like, just play some wild solo and I will track it backwards. So we like tracked it to tape and then he tracked that into the machine or the computer backwards. Yeah, Joe had like a big hand in making that song super cool.
See, I didn't even know that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, we weren't, no one was there.
Yeah, no one
was there. Are you talking about Damn Feathers or Malkit right now?
I was like trying to do all these weird like dissonant solo notes at the end, and he was like, you know, it might be cool if you have this like fluid kind of warbly thing. Let's try and make that happen.
I will say, if there's one thing about Snowing that I will always treasure, it's that we were really good at ending a song.
Yeah.
And the end of that song is
very nice.
It's very good.
It sounds like sad, but it's like it's okay sad.
Yeah.
I think it's all right. Okay.
Yeah. Melancholia, yeah.
Like when it's the last firework, you're like, oh,
that was really nice. But
that's also like the one song on the record that it may not. I don't know if it seems like it or not, but like I really struggled to write the vocals on this record. Is that Weep?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I really struggled to write the vocals on the record. and I hadn't kind of figured out how to. I'm much better now at like figuring out melodies and things like that, but like at the time I didn't really have a system for it. And that one, I remember like singing a melody to a scratch, like a scratch recording, with some like fake lyrics, and those basically became the song. Like, like the song really didn't change much, and it's kind of the only one that's sort of about nothing, but it's not. But it totally kind of also is, but it's also not.
I think the song has like this melodic loneliness that your lyrics kind of complement. Like the song,
no,
like
agree.
it's a loner song.
Once I pulled back from just thinking like this one's not so specific about my entire life, like every mm-hmm. other one was.
It's more generalized.
But once, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Once I like pulled back from that and just looked at it generally, I was like, oh, this is also about me.
Yeah, yeah, man. For sure.
That's what happens with lyrics, though. I don't know, like that Jeff Tweedy book that you also read. He would just sing syllables and then just words. He would be like, oh, well, that time I listened to it and I heard this phrase.
Right.
And that's
yeah.
where
Kirk Cobain did that, too.
Yeah.
Well, I do it more now. Like, I'm a much better, like, I feel like I'm much better at songwriting now. There's a thing, I'll say it now so you can edit it in at the point that it makes the most sense. Writing vocals in an emo band where there are already two guitars playing two separate lead melodies and then having to sing a lead melody on top of that is really, really difficult. And it took me like, I had so many scraps of paper and so many like notebooks full of just scribbled out, like I'd sit there and I'd listen to a song on this record and I would write a line and I would write like a full thing and I'd go back through the song and I'd like listen to it and I'd try and sing the words that I just wrote and I'd be like, nope, doesn't fit. And I'd like, by the end of it, there was like no space on the page with all the crossouts.
I have a great anecdote about what you just said, but I'm going to wait. It pertains to a specific song. I'm going to wait till we get to that song. I'm not going to say what song.
Sick. That's great.
I think to add on to that, like when we wrote songs, we had like zero regard for you in retrospect. I'm not saying that like we were trying to be like dicks about it, but
no,
like Nate and I were just like, let's just like Fugazi this shit. We're both the lead guitar player.
Yeah, dude.
Like,
well, but also, I mean, we built off of Street Smart where like, John and Dave really had no regard for what I was doing to the point where like John would have like in his head a vocal part and you can hear it on like the last two songs we recorded, Kiss Kitty and Be Like Science,
yeah.
where he just went in, like I recorded my vocals and then he went in and recorded his own vocals.
That was wild. That was insane. Anyway, but that was Malkit, I think.
Yeah, good one. Good one.
Malkit's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. Number four is a big one. Why am I not going underwater?
Yeah.
This is like one of the flagship Snowing songs, I think, for sure.
Which is a shame because I think like for some reason, for some reason, I feel like the recording fidelity dips like during this song. Like, I feel like...
No, I totally hear it. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's a bummer. It's always bummed me out because this is... this song and Pump Fake have always been my favorite two Snowing songs. So, like, unquestionably, I love this song so much.
Pump Fake, the only song to ever be a B-side twice.
Yeah, dude.
B-side twice.
Yeah, man.
You guys talk about it.
John and I were talking about this the other night after practice, band practice. Like JR's drum part in like that first verse is so like out of left field, and that's probably like the best part of it, I think.
Yo, that
yeah, it's like a weird.
It's like a world.
It's like
yeah. a world pop.
It's like some
song.
Vampire so, like, weekend.
No, but it's sick. And at the time, it was alien. But like,
yeah.
I mean, I really didn't know how else to like. I was the one who wrote.
Yeah, it had the little kick.
Main riff.
It swung a little.
And I didn't know how to explain that swing to JR, and he went with it, and he came up with something great. And he, like, the thing, another thing I love about the song is that every time that part comes up, JR's drum part is slightly different. The first time, it's really like it's got that swing. It's like,
and then it straightens out in the second verse.
It's but only a little bit.
Only a little bit.
Only a little bit. And then by the time it gets to the end of that song, it's that huge,
yeah,
huge, very anthemy part. JR is just going straight. It's sick. That's a really cool one. That was the first one we wrote for this record. That was the first song we wrote after Fuck Your Emotional Bullshit.
I guess instead of us talking about JR's drums, I kind of want to hear him talk about that drum part, because I never got to ask him about it, really.
I don't remember anything about writing this song, but I kind of remember feeling uncomfortable about this song. Like, it didn't feel right for some reason.
That was probably good, though, getting out of a comfort zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly, yeah, something.
Yeah, like an record.
That's part of what makes it a standout track to a lot of people, I think. You know?
Yeah, I don't really remember hearing, I mean, I stopped keeping up with Emo a few years ago, for the most part, but, like,
right.
I've never heard a song like that. Really? It's kind of the only one. That's cool. I love playing that song, too.
I feel like this is, like, a snowing anthem of sorts.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's got some
song
all the time.
Song name is Arrested Development themed.
Yeah.
Or inspired.
It is, yeah, that is true.
Which you also referencing a lyric earlier in the record, I think.
In Moxie Danielewski.
Yeah.
Tobias Fuque, Why Am I Not Underwater?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In that song. And then, but that was, we already named this song, so I was like self-referential.
To a song that hadn't happened.
To a song that hadn't happened yet. Well, in the record. I liked doing that back then. It was fun. I don't know.
Do you ever look up annotated lyrics of your own? Because, like, this entire song is annotated on Genius.
Yeah.
Weird. Did you... You didn't see that. This kind of went around on Twitter recently. I don't know if you saw it. Someone on Twitter realized that I, at one point, had gone on Genius. And I, like, looked up all the snowing quotes. And whenever someone posted something dumb, I just posted... No.
What is Genius?
It's like a.
Have you worked with GZA a lot?
It's
a lyric website. It's a lyric website where people take.
Oh, Lyric Genius?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They like analyze. People will analyze meanings of lines and such.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, so I think that, like, a large part of the reason this one is like such an anthem is because the lyrics seem like even more personal than the rest of the record. Did you have like any personal stories about the lyrics on there?
No, I think so. I had a goal in Snowing that was to write super personal lyrics, which sounds weird saying it now. I don't know. I really liked the idea at the time of being almost like overly Sherry. And I remember when we started doing like our first shows, showing how uncomfortable it made me, like knowing we were playing like shitty places with bad PAs, mostly JR's old apartment. You know, we'd have a show and we'd be getting ready. And I would just like, I would get so like unconsolably drunk because I was so afraid of what I was saying in the songs. Like, it made me really uncomfortable to sing songs like Sam Rudich because I was singing about my dad. And it made me really uncomfortable to sing like Spectre Magic because like very to the bone of how I felt just emotionally. And so anyway, this song is one of those songs. This song is like, it hit too close. Like I got like it took me a really long time to write it. And I remember sitting in the movie theater. I used to work in a movie theater. I was a projectionist. Chris Reject was my boss.
That was a concession.
Oh shit.
They were the concessionist, not at the same time.
That's on the Wikipedia page. I just saw it yesterday. So.
Oh, that's great. this song took me a really long time to write, and I wrote actually like two full sets of lyrics for it with like different melodies, and it really didn't click until I finally like Like I had the Chris Reject line already, and like, but like that's just that one part. And then the song didn't click until it was like the, like I was just sitting in the booth, and it was just like, you know, like sometimes I get drunk at night, and it was just like, oh fuck, because it was sort of just like admitting that like I drink a fair amount, which was uncomfortable to even talk about for me, and still kind of is. As we sit here
drinking beers.
Drinking beers.
Can I just say, as John's bartender, I think he's fine.
Yeah, Nate now bartends at the bar that I, really the only bar I like going to. So,
it's the only bar I like going to.
Yeah.
I take the subway.
Is that why I see you so much?
Yeah, well, wrestling's not on every day. So.
Sometimes you want to go to the bar where Nate works.
If you start bartending Sunday nights during pay-per-views, then.
That'd be sick. You should work WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But anyway, so like once that hit, it was just sort of like, oh yeah, okay. Like sometimes I get drunk at night when drink turns fast into five. Like it all just sort of flew out then. I was like, yep, here it is. And but the cool thing about that is that also immediately made it one of my favorite songs, because I was like, this is like suddenly super important to me. Like this is suddenly very real, and that made it special. I liked it before. I liked it even more then.
That's awesome. Thank you. Like that was a really awesome answer. But real quick, I also just want to shout out JR and Nate's like nonverbal communication throughout. it's been really amusing to me.
Throughout. Yeah, JR was slapping. He was laying some slap down.
JR, is that like an affinity track? What is that?
I'm like Feel the on guitar.
Yeah. Gosh.
Oh, Jude, we're supposed to start playing, according to Nick, Taza, we're supposed to start playing Apex Legends together.
I have it too.
On PlayStation?
Yeah.
He doesn't like that game.
I just wanted to change the subject after I said all that emotional shit.
Well, that's good though. That's good. Never mind.
I'm always down to play on PlayStation. You guys always tell me that you don't play online because you're playing.
Yeah, I don't want to talk to people.
Online games.
Anyway,
all right.
Let's talk about what you guys want to talk about.
Song five. You bring something? No. The shortest song on the record. Punchiest song on the record. It looks like y'all had a lot of fun with it.
I like this one.
I fucking love this.
I was gonna
track.
Say let's yeah. Let Nate talk about it.
Yo, this is like the most ripping song.
I've got it.
Nate's parts fucking cool.
We recorded this for that tape that Danny put out. Okay. And Danny, when he proposed this idea for the tape, was like, yo, the whole thing is going to be like just really shitty demos, like just garbage demos for everybody. And I was like, yo, Danny's doing a tape. It's like garbage demos, just like real shitty. Let's record this thing. And we got fucking Alan Vito to record it in my old basement on a fucking 16 track that he had no idea how to operate.
Yo, the dude had 16 tracks to figure it out. the one iPhone is like leaps and bounds better.
So the best part is if you listen to that tape, everybody else's song is like top-notch quality recording quality, and then our song sounds like it came out of a fucking like an iPhone that got thrown down a staircase.
It like, sounds like, you know, that song on that tape sounds like you're at a Wawa and someone just has a song playing off their iPhone. and you're like you're all hungover and you're all bent out of shape. You're all like, yo, who the fuck is playing some fast ass song right now? I'm not into it. And I am just trying to sit in silence right now and order my hoagie and get my hoagie, my man. You're fucking up my shit. But no, that's how bad it sounds. It sounds like intrusively bad. But on the record, I think it's dope.
I also think it's dope. I was very excited to have an actual recording of this song.
Yo, I love that song. I love the riffs. I love how fast it is. Like,
I feel like Nate and I shared a love for heavy and fast music.
Hell yeah, my man. Fist bump.
lot of Fight Amp that we were listening to during the recording.
Yeah. JR, come on. Don't leave me hanging.
A lot of what you were listening to?
Oh, yeah.
There was this Philly band called Fight. They were called Fight Amputation, but they shortened it to Fight Amp. They were just real noisy.
They were like
hardcore band, kind of.
They're more than that. Y'all never.
But Nate
loved hardcore. I've never listened to that.
But Nate loved Fight Amp.
You got a rainbow over me. Anyway, that's all I gotta say about that song. It was fast, hard, super notey and weird. And John just wrote some like sick, screamy lyrics for it.
Sounded like if 1994 had four people.
Yeah.
Which is a compliment.
I mean, I insulted Chris Deem in his own house, so we'll see what he has to say about it.
I also really like John's lyrics because they made me laugh. They're very over the top.
Okay.
You know, it's about the end of the universe. And
it's about the end of the universe. That was the other thing about that comp. We didn't really have a lot of time. So we had this like song, we were like, all right, we'll do that one. And then I just had to be like it took me months to write lyrics for the other songs, and this one was just like, whoop, gotta finish it.
where did the song name come from? Because I don't remember.
All movies.
All movies.
Oh wow.
The cartoon.
Yeah.
We're not gonna do them. We're not gonna tell you what episode, just home movies came from home movies.
Watch the whole thing. It's good. Great.
No one's gonna do their Coach McGurk impression, right?
Mm-mm.
All right. Cool. All right, next song. So I shotgunned a beer and went to bed. I think even more than Why Am I Not Going Underwater, I think this is like the big Snelling song.
It's our most played song on Spotify.
Yeah.
And I believe I called it the power ballad.
Cool.
I think also, fucking cool.
It's also the one with the quotables. Yeah.
Okay, what'd you say?
This is also the one with the quotables, with the minor case major depression. You know?
Yeah, well, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's the big lyric I always see quoted. Besides, like all the Melissa lyrics.
I think JR's drum part is like one of the best parts of that. It's like it's like quasi hip hop beat almost. It was like way not what we were doing at the time. It was cool.
JR, play us your drum part on the guitar, please.
I originally wrote that drum part for a band I was doing with Alan Vito and Joe Reinhardt and Danny Scruzzi.
Really? I did not know that.
Hell yeah, dude. Your place any day of the week.
That was that one we did that one for the tour tape too.
We did. Yep. My favorite recording of ours. If y'all can find that recordings of that tour tape online.
It's on Spotify.
Yeah, that's my as far as the range of fidelity, that is my jam. And I think the tour tape sounds better than the full length. That's just
I love the way we utilized the hall of the model home for that recording.
Yeah. And you know who helped produce on my guitar ship? Mike Kuhn.
Yeah.
Mike Kuhn was there the day I was doing guitars, and he was walking me up and down the hallway with Kevin Keenan, placing mics and shit, like, yo, it sounds best here.
Whoa.
That shit was baller. That shit was sick.
I think that song, just between you and me, Nate, that's like probably our best guitar interplay.
Yeah,
it's not like I feel like a lot of our songs were like, I have a riff, you have a riff.
It was very competitive.
Let's play them at the same time.
We never really linked up where it was like, you and I think our guitar and play stuff is best because we were very competitive with each other.
Oh yeah, well,
and we were always trying to outplay each other and outmelody each other. But that one I think was just like
we worked together.
Yeah. On that one more than any other song.
As a neutral third party in this guitar player duel, I always thought that Ross wrote better parts to your songs than you wrote to Ross songs.
I disagree.
Okay.
I think we were either way. It was hard though.
But that song specifically is very, very good.
We wrote backwards, like we'd basically bring leads.
Yeah, dude.
And it was kind of like Nate would bring a lead and it'd be like, I kind of have to write a rhythm part to this, which is not how you write songs.
Which is also
not all the time.
Yeah.
Wait, but also your rhythm part would be a lead.
I think I think what John said is truer.
Yeah.
We would both bring songs that were leads under rhythm parts, so we're trying to play at the same time,
yeah,
and then we would both try and write parts that were accompanying both rhythm and leads to that. And I think that would happen more than someone would show up with a lead that someone would have to play with, is that we would both have a song written, not really express that, and the other person would write a song on top of it.
Yeah. Not that we're on this level. I keep bringing this band up, but like you and I both love Fugazi. That might be where it consciously comes from.
Sure, maybe. I don't know. Maybe we just didn't know how to talk about it. I was fucking 18.
Yeah, true.
Like, I was fucking 18. I didn't know how to talk about shit.
None of us did. We're all fucking children.
Yeah.
Did this song get, like, a reaction at the time? Like, was this, like, a live favorite at the time?
Actually, no. We rarely played it because it was slow. Yeah. It was long.
It was hard to play well.
Yeah, it was hard to nail. If it was a song you fucked up, it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
We didn't understand, like... Personally, I feel like we, in the past 3 or 4 years, we finally understand how to not play at full volume.
Oh, sure, dynamic, like any type of...
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't play slow, we couldn't play quiet.
Yeah. It was either fast and loud, like we were insane people trying to get out of there, or...
Well, like, on that, John brought this up, there's that live set on the subreddit. John's like, we just sound like a fucking hardcore band. Like...
We do, our best moments during that set... We sound like a hardcore band. I'm barking the lyrics, and we are loud as shit. And then we try and play a couple, like, we try and play Big Weep, which I have to sing. It sounds horrible. Mm-hmm. We try and play the one song from, like, the batch of songs at the end of the band.
Yeah, the new song.
Oh, Big Spine?
Big Spine. Yeah. We play Big Spine. And it sounds bad.
I'll get back together, record Big Spine. I love that song.
Yeah, into it. I love that song.
Wow, thanks, guys. I love that. Yeah, we sounded best as just like a hard, fast ripper band at the time. I mean, this was also like 3 weeks into a tour in which every night we were drinking and also I was screaming. So voices in general weren't the best.
What is each of yours' favorite hardcore band?
Well, I'm going to get called out as a poser because they're not even a hardcore band.
Oh, you
band
first
anymore.
Then.
Ceremony.
It used to be.
What are you talking about?
I love Ceremony.
They're hardcore record.
There was also there was this hardcore band from the Lehigh Valley called the Gatecrashers that I really love.
I remember them. Shit.
Dudes who are in Piss Jeans now were in that band.
Yeah.
One of my favorite hardcore records and bands. So that's my two, I think.
Oh, we get two. Well, I'll just do one. I'll follow the rules. I'm gonna say my favorite hardcore record is Heavier Than Heaven.
That's a good
pick. I was just going to say, you listen to a shitload of Blacklisted.
My third favorite Blacklisted record.
That record rules.
Yeah. That record still catch me giving my mean face to people much bigger than me walking down the street listening to that record.
Hell,
fucking, that's my shit.
I don't think I have an answer right now.
Probably Wilco.
Yeah, Wilco is my favorite.
Super Unison record is John's favorite.
Yeah, that's it. The latest Super... What are they called? Unison? Yeah. I'm kidding. I'm sorry, Juice.
Fine.
No, JR, what's your favorite? I want to know.
I'm bad at favorites. The Gatecrashers one is a good one. Ultimate Wait, Warriors, too.
JR, you and I shared another favorite. Hungry for Nothing by Fight Ant.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Hungry for Nothing by Fight Ant is also up there.
I'm literally pulling up my Spotify to see what the last heavy music was.
I thought we turned off our phones for this.
Oh my god!
I'm trying to remember. You like Modern Life is War, didn't you?
Sure.
Yeah.
This isn't
great.
Just, no one's going to call anyone out for me.
Fuck you, Nate. Yeah.
So what's the song after?
Yeah. What?
Getting into side B.
We didn't really talk about.
Yeah.
Let's. Any special memories with this song?
I can give you. I can give you an anecdote.
All right.
Anecdote.
Thank you. I came up with the intro lyric at the dentist.
I'll tell you where the title of the song came from. When I was a freshman in college, I was talking to a buddy of mine. Well, I was hanging out with a buddy of mine at a party, and I had like done that thing where you go to a party and you don't really know anybody, and then you walk away from him for a little bit. Like, I'm going to meet people. And then I just like eventually failed at that and wandered back to him. And him saying, "So I shotgunned a beer and went back to bed," was the first thing I walked in on that conversation. And so that's where the title of the song came from.
Kyle, are you happy I'm like done talking about hardcore now?
I'm fine with it.
Okay, cool. So resigned. All right. next song, It's Just a Party, which is the I think this is the other pop punk song.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, I thought it was a different one, the other pop punk song.
No, this
we'll get to that. Let's start the end.
What to say?
I loved playing this one.
I will also say, I'll say two things about this song. A, I think it's the, like, technically,
oh, hello.
Technically the best at guitar I've ever tracked a song. I don't know that I've ever been more technically proficient at getting a song down.
That shit is completely insane.
And I'm super proud of that guitar part, and I love it very much. And second of all, that the song title refers to my best friend Sam Rudich coming back from Fest for the first time. And I asked him how it was, and he, with a very big air of resignation, said, "It's just a party."
I like how you were the one who like did not want to discuss the song titles, and you've explained those song titles.
Yeah, but this one isn't about Mark Z. Whoever, like, I don't know.
We really weren't going to talk about
Mark Z. Was this a me song or you song, mate?
This is a me song. Actually, I don't know.
It's a me song.
This might have been one of the weird ones where like you had two parts and I had two parts, and we combined it.
Did we record? What was? I always associate this song with Scherbatsky. Like we. Maybe we wrote them together.
Yeah, we wrote them at the same time. I think I like Scherbatsky better.
Yeah, hey, guys, can we talk about why Scherbatsky is not on the record?
No, we can't. No, we cannot.
I dated two people named Melissa, and this is the only one about the good one. And it's just, lyrically, it's just a really nice song about a person that I still, to this day, love very much.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. She plays drums in the band that Ross and I are in.
Sick.
She's my best friend. I love her so much. I don't know what I would do without her. And suddenly I'm teary-eyed.
She would too when she hears them.
Yeah.
So if it means anything, this is my favorite song on the record.
Oh, oh shit. Yeah. No way.
That's what's up.
Yeah. It was a cool one.
That's rad.
Oh, it's got that. I love the outro. When I wrote the outro,
again,
I like.
No, good at outro.
Good at outro. I love the outro. When I wrote that outro, I was really into Teenage Cool Kids.
Hell yeah.
Good band.
I was really into Teenage Cool Kids, Foreign Lands.
Yeah.
And the way I was playing it, it was super clean. It wasn't really heavy. It was more straightforward. Instead of being like a more breakdown beat, it was just going to be like... But, you know, that obviously wasn't going to work. And it's for the better. It was that was a good one. I love that song.
It's a great one.
Hey, Teenage Cool Kids was a great band.
Still is.
His best band.
Parquet Courts.
No, I don't know.
Fergus and Geronimo.
They're all great bands. I don't know.
I don't like Fergus and Geronimo. I like
really?
Parquet Courts. Good shit.
You got enough?
Hell yeah. This next one is the only one that I actually didn't have any notes on. Memo, Yeah, That's Fine, Man.
I feel like this song gets zero, like, this was such an afterthought, right?
Is Memo, Yeah, That's Fine, Man, the...
Yep.
All right, that's all? Like, from Dayquil to Good
yep.
Night.
Yeah.
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 I fucking love this song, too.
You
and like
show.
All right.
Not a once.
Also, I'm just going to repeat what I said. Guitar part I'm most proud of.
My favorite song, too.
Guitar part I'm most proud of. Our interplay on that song.
Under that lit from Dayquil to Good Night. Under that
Yeah,
I ripped off an Iron Sheet.
That was great.
That.
Also, this is the anecdote I wanted to say earlier.
Go ahead.
John was having a lot. He told me he was having a lot of trouble writing vocals or a melody for this song, and for some reason he asked me for advice, and I was like, "Why don't you just play guitar to it, and like come up with a melody over it, and then sing whatever you're playing on guitar?" Whether or not he did that, I don't know, but it kind of sounds like he did. It kind of sounds like you're just playing like a descending octave like melody over it.
Yeah.
But you're just singing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I fucking love that song. It's short and sweet. That like weird key, not key change, but that weird goat note in the middle of it when it goes to a C.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That part rules.
That was cool.
That song, I feel like that was when we were writing it musically was like a sudden front runner as my favorite song.
I think it was the last one we wrote before
and
we
that's
recorded.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
It was the last one we wrote before we recorded, and we didn't get, we really just didn't give it enough time. Like,
if we gave it the perfect.
No, but if you look at like, you know, Underwater, we wrote it so long before, and then it took me literally probably like 8 months to write good vocals to it.
Yeah, but man, I know two people with tattoos corresponding to the lyrics of that song.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, so
wait, this song?
Two people, they have friend tattoos. One guy has a from Dayquil, and the other guy has Too Good Night, and it's a bottle of NyQuil.
Jesus
it's
Christ!
From Dayquil, it's a bottle of Dayquil, and the other one's from Good Night, and it's a bottle of NyQuil.
Cool.
And maybe there's like some other lyrics, like I don't know, but people have showed me that shit before. Like, it's out there. So
really
you,
cool.
You think you didn't have enough time with that shit? I mean, it fucking landed, dude.
I remember recording or like kind of writing some of the drum parts as I was recording this song, and I think it came out quite well.
JR, I think the only like argument I ever had
you
with you,
the guitar is the worst thing I've ever seen.
The only like standoff I ever had with you about a part in this entire band was writing this song.
Really?
I don't remember. Yeah. So in that part, Nate and I were talking about the Dayquil to Good Night part. You were playing something like real wild, and I and like Nate and I were kind of shredding, and I was like, JR, you need to play like, boom, boom, tsh, like the punk beat here.
Mm-hmm.
The DB punk beat?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like a little, yeah. I remember like you were playing that, and I was like, "Let's play your way. Let's play my way." And when we played,
John's pants are so good.
Wait, did I take your advice?
You did.
Yeah.
You play a very straight part in that bridge.
Mm.
Yeah. I really like. I love this song.
I like also how like the ending. The end. My favorite band is Superchunk, and I think the end sounds like it's like. Such a fucking super chunk.
I 100% hear that. Thank you.
That song is the only song on the record that everyone unanimously voted to cut something out of. I had a solo at the beginning of the song. And everyone was like, we're not having this. Even Joe, who is normally like very like, it's up to y'all. He was like, yeah, it's better without it. I think I found out because I went in to listen to it one day and it wasn't on there. And instead of bringing that up, I was just like, I understand.
Well, I think it's good because it's so tight. There's like there's no fluff in that song. I think it was hard for John to sing.
Oh, yeah, he couldn't sing it and play it at the same time.
Yeah, that was awful. Yeah.
This one, actually, real quick, the only thing I want to say about it is it's the only song that I had to write moments before singing the final version. This is the only one I could say, like, oh, I wrote the lyrics in the studio. Yep, it's the only one. But I did. Also, the second verse reflects, like, a time in Lehigh Valley when I thought things were going to sort of get better as a person that was, like, kind of stuck in a situation I didn't like. I was, like, starting to feel better about the place where I lived. So I was really excited in a weird way. And I was writing about that. And, I won't say whether or not any of that came true. None of it came true. Things stayed pretty bad. But like, I remember being like really optimistic when I was writing these lyrics. The people in the song are like very specific people about a very specific place.
A lot of it didn't turn out all right.
No. A lot of it did not turn out okay.
I'd say very bad, in fact.
Yeah, I get that. Damn, that's weird.
And I think that's also part of the reason we never played it.
Well, no.
I mean, I don't think so. I'll totally play that part. Just change the guy's name.
Yeah, no, it's more just like we couldn't play it.
Physically.
Like, we literally could
not emotionally.
Play it.
Like, as a band.
Next song is KJ Jammin'.
The best song.
Real quick, I actually just wanted to share a personal anecdote. This song meant a lot to me, like, my freshman year of college, because I didn't start drinking until I was in college, and it was cool that someone else had lyrics about drinking later in life. So,
yeah.
I really like the song. I think the groove is fucking awesome and chilled out and smooth.
It's another song that doesn't sound like an emo song. We always call it surf rock.
Yeah.
Internally,
that was the
name of the song
title.
That was the working. Is it called KJ Jammin' because you had a dream?
I had a dream. I had a dream that I was on our MySpace profile, and We were a huge fan when our most played song was called KJ Jammin'. So I was like, we should name the song KJ Jammin'. because obviously we'll get some sort of Oedipal returns.
It's a bummer that this isn't the most played song on something.
Yeah, I feel like a horse's ass.
I agree.
I think our guitar interplay is good on that one too.
Yeah. The only thing I wish we had on the record, and we had the foresight to do on the record, is we should have did a rhythm guitar track under the chorus. We should have did like a rhythm track there. So it would have been like,
well, again, I was playing, again, the guitar part I wrote was me playing the rhythm and the lead at the same time, and I thought if I doubled that, that would make up for that. This is clearly not.
My part doubled your part too.
Well, so
that is also a thing.
Here we are.
So no one was playing chords.
That's ridiculous.
What's a chord?
What's a chord?
I think the only chords I played in that band were like the octave chords.
What is a man? A miserable life. A miserable secrets.
This song always makes me think of, and I'm trying to think if the timing is right. Remember that band Surfer Blood?
Oh yeah.
That first record came out around then. I remember being really into that first Surfer Blood record.
Well, I was already really deep into garage rock.
Yeah, garage rock.
So I was like, any time you could do like the Ronettes beat, like the boom 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 ba boom 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 boom. Bah. I was like, yep, that's me.
Oh, Sir Rock Damon, yo, you got the thing.
You
eh?
Still have
JR, why do you have all this shit?
Yeah, I'm glad. Dude, I've got the archives.
Is that taped to the back of the guitar? Where'd you get that from?
Oh, this is what it sounds like, though.
Oh, bummer.
Well, you can't hear it. You have AirPods in, my man.
My man.
Anyway, another thing I fucking loved about playing this song is I think it's the only song on the record with like a full dropout where it's just one instrument.
Yeah, it's you.
And it is me, and I love me. But also, like, I that's just like, that comes at such a great time on the B side, too.
Chris just got Wawa delivered, yeah, which is I'd pretty great. If I could just
one time. And so come here,
Chris. Can Chris say hi?
You want to say something about Snowing? You got anything to say?
Wonderful band. Never heard of them. Am I going to say something about the person that delivered my wallet?
Yeah, please.
Face tattoos. They were wearing a matching sweatsuit with a matching hat, also made out of sweatpants material, and they were drinking the chocolate milk.
I told you my dad was working for Wawa, and you said you wouldn't say anything, and here we are.
And you guys don't live in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that was like a
the
great.
The fuck is wrong with you?
That was a great advertisement for South Philadelphia.
Yeah, here we are. Something. He was like,
Kyle, can we please name this episode dedicated to the person who delivered Chris's Wawa?
Absolutely.
That's fine. Anyway, no, KJ Jammin', great guitars, great. Just great friends.
Oh, can I point out something I love about that song? We got my good friend Dave Sampson to do backup vocals.
Ooh.
All of the good harmonies you hear, that's actually true. We haven't had a chance to talk about this at all. No. Any of the harmonies you hear on this record,
this wonderful sentiment ruined by a meme.
Wow. Wow. Pick your nose in shame.
Start over.
So the backups on this song are done by a friend of mine, Dave Sampson, is in this wonderful band, High Tide Hotel. And
you were too.
I was, but in a lesser capacity. But when we were looking for, John specifically was looking for someone to do backups, like, for all the vocals on, you know, everything on the record. Dave Sampson came up. Dude's just got a great voice. He's got a great range. Mm-hmm. Sat in there great. And I know for a fact that man drove around listening to, like, fucking scratch demos of like vocals and guitars, getting his shit right. So like, I don't know, unsung hero of the record, I think.
Definitely is. I definitely remember at the time I really didn't know anything. Like, I was really bad at, I came up with my lyrics and my vocals, but the idea of trying to figure out like what a melody or what a harmony should be was kind of impossible. And we weren't really the people that like I feel like all of us worked with before, no one did shit like we didn't work with people that were like, oh cool, that was a good take, double that. Like we didn't do any of that. Like everyone was just like, that's your vocal, great, keep going. And you know, so we brought Dave in to do like really just like four songs,
yeah,
and like four vocal parts, and he nailed them immediately.
Yeah,
and
it was a short day.
And he also sang his own harmonies. We were just like, okay, we want you, we like a harmony here, and he just did it, and it was perfect every time.
It's especially good on that song. Every time I hear this song,
when it cuts into the "Someone Sober Drive My Car" part,
yeah,
that's great.
The thing about this song is that the like, I really, especially in this record, with how the things were going, where the songs were going, and where lyrically the songs were going, I really wanted to document this first thing, like this, like, because obviously drinking seems to be a big part of this Snowing legacy. So I needed to like, I did really want to document like this, the first occurrence. So like the whole first verse is so true. The first time I had a beer, like I went to my buddy's house, and they were all sitting around having drinks, and I was just like sitting there. I think we were watching Family Guy again. It was probably like 2008, and they were all just like, I had just gotten dumped. I had to move home from my college apartment to my mom's house. I was really just like, everything was bad, and I had a nervous breakdown. I almost had to drop out of school. Like it was really bad. My mental health has always been bad. That's one of the worst times it ever was. Unfortunately, instead of getting like any sort of help, what I actually did was like I started drinking. But the whole story is like very true. Like I remember like I was at Jay's house. Bill and Jay were both there. That's all true. It's all a thing. Like and I remember like walking to the bathroom after having like two Miller Lights and like feeling the stumble in my step and being like, oh fuck, this is beer. This is what alcohol feels like. This is a real thing. I had never known. I didn't know. And then also my next door neighbor had two very tiny, yippy, annoying, shitty dogs. Someone's over, drive my car, drop me off in my front yard, honk the horn three times to wake up Tim and Kim Burke's dogs. They had two dogs, Emmett and Dallas.
Her name wasn't Kimber?
Kim and Tim. That was the couple that lived next to us. But yeah, they had like specifically yippy dogs, and there were two dachshunds. One was actually blind and deaf.
Hmm.
The other one, or no, she was just blind. I'm sorry. She was just blind.
She didn't know English.
But the other one, every time the other one barked, this one would bark. So it was like a real shit show. Anyway, that's the story of that song from the lyric perspective.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for that answer. That was another really, really awesome, insightful one. So really, you got to move on now to Damp Feathers, the catchiest song on the record, I think, or the most accessible one, at least.
I'm gonna shout out Nate to start, because I never wrote a guitar part for this song, and I sat down to record it. I had basically an anxiety attack because I was under a lot of pressure to write one in the studio, and I just texted Nate like, "Hey, buddy, can you just write a guitar part for me so I don't play on this song?" And I learned to play it at the reunion shows.
That's true.
Nate plays an organ on this song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it one chord?
Yeah, one chord through a, what are those? Leslie.
Yeah.
It was like one of those stand-up air organs through a Leslie speaker. That was a great addition. Yeah, this is one of those, like, I love playing guitar in this band. I love writing guitar stuff for this band. And this song was like my like big shiny moment where I like
this was your opus.
Yeah, kind of like, yeah, this is the one I'm most proud of.
It's wild we wrote that song compared to the rest of the record.
And it was to kind of like put it in a different light though. So the way when we say like it was one person's song, it was another person's song, that is to say like they are the parts. Like I wrote the parts, but when I came to the band with it, like John and Dar and Ross and I really like fleshed it all out to be a song, to be like something that had a structure. But this one in particular, in terms of like my technical playing and like the melody of it, I don't know, the one I was most happy with on the record.
I think part of the reason I couldn't write a guitar part, because when I listened to it in the studio, I was just like, I don't think I could improve this. I don't think it needs another part.
Ross.
And yeah, it was good. Nate, you're great at guitar. Nate, you're better at guitar.
That's why you're playing bass.
That's why I play bass now. I'm a bass player.
Yeah. That's why I'm a bartender.
That's why Nate's a bartender and Ross plays bass.
I fiddled with parts there with Joe, and I was like, dude, I can't. Like, if he can add to it, awesome. But I don't want to.
Oh, there's also another great Dave Sampson vocal appearance.
I'm gonna get to that.
You were gonna get to that. Yeah. All right, I'll let you get to that. But this song also has a couple great. One thing I loved about recording guitar with Joe Reinhart on this record was he let me keep clubs in. Like, he let me keep, like,
oh, there's a great notes. Bad note I love.
Yeah, it was like, he let me keep goat notes, he let me keep just, you know, there are things that I know I fucked up that I felt confident were fine, you know? I felt confident they worked towards the song, and there are a bunch of things that, like, you know, he also encouraged me were cosmetically enhancing for the overall vibe of the song. And this was a big one for that.
Anyway.
Any stories about lyrics for the song?
Nope.
Really?
My favorite lyric of yours is in the song.
No way.
Yeah, my heart's like a ball of twine. It takes a little time to unwind. I love that line.
You know, you told me that when like right after the record was done, and all I could think was like, oh, okay. So I was like, I mean, I yeah, it's a nice line. It's the most emo line.
It's very evocative, and I love it.
I will say, I was going to say the Dave Sampson thing. Maybe different from what you were going to say.
What do you mean?
When the song hits after the second chorus, when it starts the come closer part, which is like a part I came up with and like I was like really excited about, my voice was so shot from singing all the other songs. This is one of the last songs that we recorded vocally. My voice was so shot, I couldn't carry the note. That's not me singing. That's Dave Sampson.
Yeah.
That's Dave from High Point Hotel singing, come closer, closer. I don't sing on that part until...
you can be...
Yeah, he can't be the one you want all the time. It's not me. I couldn't do it. Partly because, I mean, like, you listen to the rest of Snowing and it's some asshole screaming and I had to do all that, and then suddenly we had this song where it's like I'm just supposed to sing and I couldn't. I like my voice was so literally so shot that I couldn't do it.
I said to you the other day, I can't believe how that you can still sing, like, because I've been listening to the record a little bit, but, you know, remind myself, and I just don't know how you didn't destroy your voice. Like, I'm not joking, it was fucked up what you did to yourself. You sang way out of your range. Like,
yeah,
listen to anything else John does, he's not in the ballpark of where he was. And it's a product of the keys we wrote songs in because of the tunings. Like, it's a weird spot for John to sing somehow. Somehow he's okay.
I also had weird, like, when Snowing started, my big inspiration vocally was the band Kickball, which it's like I could never hit.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been listening to them a lot lately because out of research.
The notes that the singer of that band could hit were things that I could at no point in my life, like even as a baby. Like, I'm pretty sure when I cried, it didn't go that high. There was a Kickball song, the song, the titular line, the everything is to the blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like before that line hits, he does that big like
the long held note.
Don't you go back and listen to Kickball, the best.
They're on Bandcamp, man.
Oh,
I forgot one
Kickball
other
rules.
One other guitar thing about this song. So when we were writing this song as a band, putting all those parts together, John was the one who came up with the idea, insisted upon that bridge part where it's just the guitar and the vocals, the come closer part. And when writing that, I didn't have anything like at the time. And then I remembered this like weird melody I'd written for like a song I'd half written for a girl I dated in high school and played for her once. And I would that out the and it's just like it's in the whole thing's in drop D anyway, so it can all be played with just like, you know, the pointer ring and pinky finger. I remember just like whipping that out of my pocket and it working, and that being like a very satisfying moment of like having written guitar parts that don't get used in anything immediately but then become useful later.
One question: have you all seen the Snowing Copypasta?
Huh?
That is centered around this song.
What's a copypasta?
I haven't seen this.
Oh, she Devils, who's a moderator on Reddit, like wrote it, and it got like quoted in some article about the Broken World Fest performance too. I'm not gonna read it out loud because it's ridiculous, but it like literally just vocalizes the guitars from Damp Feathers. That's like a big part of its appeal. Like literally writes out like jiao, like it's great. I'll send it to y'all in Skype.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, all right, hell yeah.
Let's
yeah.
do.
I have no idea what we're talking about or what's going on. I love it. So.
My personal favorite part of it is that he compares he doesn't compare. He's like, who was the best writer in the world? Was it Nietzsche? Was it Tommy Pinecone? Was it David Foster Wallace? No, it was John fucking Galm.
Who's Tommy Pinecone?
Thomas Pynchon.
Tommy Pinecone.
Yo, Tommy Pinecone, that's my dude.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Hell yeah, my man. Tommy Pinecone.
We only played this song once, ever.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be twice.
I played the song once. At the final show.
At Broken World Fest we were gonna play it, but our set was ended early.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Intuit Over had to play for 3.5 hours the night before. Everyone had to catch up on their wherewithal or whatever.
I was a little worried it would never got played because the smoke machine thing happened at the last show. And, you know,
well,
the cops came.
We're putting the cart before the horse now. We got to keep going. What's the next song?
Yeah.
Next song is the last song. It's Could Be Better Forever.
All right.
And
a fucking inside joke.
I think this is like the perfect ending to the record, by the way. Mm-hmm. John has been like raising his hand like surreptitiously this entire.
So where we talked about how like Minsk is like kind of the perfect opening.
Mm.
I remember like when we were working on this, I was like, this is the end. Like I knew, like in my head, I just knew that this was it. We did dumb titles for a lot of songs. I'm always like really down to give credit where credit's due. Like Nate came up with the title for the record. You did. Did you know that?
It was something my mom said to me. But...
Oh shit! But Could Be Better Forever is like a personal thing for me. I was like, this is it. This summarizes everything perfectly. Like this song, this is the end of everything. And honestly, in my head, it makes sense that like we don't have to make any more music after this because it's like this is like the end of the snowing chapter of my life.
Even though we recorded a song after this.
Shut up.
It was a spiritual ending.
Yeah,
we had to wait to record the best song.
The thing was, it was definitely the perfect end to the record, and it was like a really, I mean, we were all kind of like once we were done making this record, we were all kind of like, let's do something else.
Yeah.
Let's not be an emo band. Let's do anything else, literally. But yeah, no, could be better forever. That was just a sentiment that I thought about where I was like, that just describes my entire life. I think this song sort of sums that up. No, it doesn't. It's way fucked up. It's way more fucked up than that. Someone else talk for a little bit.
I was gonna say, in the same way that I was saying that Minsk is like this sort of I was listening to some podcast once that broke down a 5-paragraph essay in a really funny way. You tell them what you're gonna tell them. You tell them, and then you tell them what you told them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if Minsk is you tell them what you're gonna tell them, could be better forever. Is you tell them what you told them. Because we do everything that we do throughout the record, like, but I don't know, in the best possible way. Like, Ross and I have the best guitar interplay. JR's got the great swing. But, like, he's still super powerful. He's got that swing. I make you sound like you're in the Cherry Poppin' Daddies or something.
Yeah.
Fucking wish, man.
Squirrel Nut Zippers, yeah.
Yeah. Really heavy.
That song is.
And it's weird because it's not in, like, the drop D tune.
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It checks all those boxes.
But it is in E. So
yeah. I would like to say this is the drum part to this song is another one that I warm up with all the time.
Hell yeah.
I love the drum part to this song.
Oh, you do.
Especially the
Yeah.
One of my favorite guitar parts I wrote is the end, but it was one of those ones where I'm glad I wrote it, but I kicked myself playing it live because I was like, I can barely play this.
Well, this is another one. This is another one we barely played live.
You solo over the end, and it's like very triumphant. But I remember when I was writing it, I was like, I'm gonna play this really like arpeggiated part that slides around, like a Johnny Marr part. And that's like my favorite probably piece of production, because it's like a super triumphant part, and you'd think I'd be playing like big chords.
No,
but
you're
I'm
just
playing like a clean
plucky
arpeggio,
right?
And you're like riffing this like it's like a I don't even know. It's like such a fucking triumphant ending on guitar. It's just it's like a weird like dichotomy between two parts. I always really liked that.
It is, and I think the guitar parts are the best Knowing songs work, where you can take one of us out of them and they still really work.
It's still good.
Like you could take me out of a song and it's still good. You could take you out of a song and it's still good. Like I don't know. And when they play off each other like that, I really love it.
Do you think it's because we were bad at being a band and we would practice without members all the time?
And I also I
can't come tonight. Just fucking do it without me.
Yeah. And also like they're like I mean, just speaking for myself, I was horrible at approaching anybody about an idea I didn't like. Yeah, there were a bunch of decisions made that at the time I was like, this is a horrible idea, and I was wrong. But then I also, in my defense, fought for a bunch of ideas that turned out being great. So, great learning experience for everyone.
What I did to bass. Great. You know, what we haven't talked about in Snowing is my bass playing.
Yeah, that's I was just going to say, we've never played your bass
which,
at all.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to talk about
it. Well, here's the thing. Let me just get out of the way real quick. Go ahead. Juice?
Yeah, I would say I love playing with John because at the time, the only other person that I played with was Jake Clark on bass, and that was fucking awful. And I was like, oh, John actually knows how to play bass. This is pretty sick. I wish we had more songs where it was like rhythm.
Right. I agree.
I was trying to be all showy and wild.
Right. The funny thing about the bass on this record, which we haven't talked about yet, and I will just say now, is that I went into, you know, Justin recorded the drums, and I go in the next day or whatever, the next session, to lay down the bass, and I start playing the parts that I had written and that we had practiced and all that, and Joe just kind of looked at me and went like, no. And I was like, and I was like, what do you mean? He's like, no, these aren't right. And then we rewrite basically all of my bass parts in the studio on the spot.
Which is very easy when you're not listening to the rest of the band.
Yeah.
That's insane to think we did it that way.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I'm pretty sure it's not, it doesn't enhance the record in any way. And also like...
Your bass playing?
Yeah.
Man, come on. I'll say that.
No, but like the things that he made me switch.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I can't speak to that.
Right.
Damn.
Yeah.
You got me.
No, there were some songs where like straight up, like Underwater is one where he was like, no, don't do that. Do this. And I'm like, I don't know why I would ever do that. That doesn't even seem right. And he was like, do it. Just do it. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I did it. And, you know, it's like you start recording. And he's like, that wasn't the right take. Keep going. And I was like,
damn.
I'm doing your part
now. It's so weird because, like,
he just Ross Robinson you.
It seems like he let you make do whatever the fuck you wanted.
Well, I insisted.
Yeah. I never got edited.
I it was very hard to say no to me during that recording process. I definitely knew exactly how I wanted everything of mine to sound. I just had no frame of reference to even think about anyone else in the band and how their stuff was going to sound. If you had asked me, it was the Nate show. And that's how I recorded all my stuff, and it was taken out accordingly. But yeah, your bass playing, man. I mean, you got some good tones in there.
Oh, the tones are great. It's Peter's bass.
Right. Yeah. The
which just incredible.
Story. Right.
I actually after we got done recording the record, Joe told me like the series and model of bass that it is, because it's a very specific like Fender Precision bass.
Is it a made in Japan one?
It's Japanese one, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's something, but it's a certain year, and it's like
it's a Yamaha.
Right. And I don't know, but either way, I was constantly going on eBay to try and find another bass like this, because I was just like, the tone was so perfect that it made everything, like, I played just the normal jazz bass, Mexican jazz bass, and it made it sound like so shitty. The bass tone was wildly good. Joe just made me rewrite all the parts. That's the only problem there. I have to talk about the song now, right? So it's going on.
You don't necessarily have to if you don't want to.
Well, I should. So I will say this is another like important one for me. It sucks that we like never played it, because it's like, I feel like it's really hard to play the really like every band I've been in. It's really hard to play the really like difficult ones. The ones that are like different than the other ones. The ones that shut up.
It's hard to play the difficult one.
It's one of those ones that kind of stray away from the normal situation. So like we never played Damp Feathers because it was so quiet. We never played we rarely played Chalk on a Beer because it was like slow and long. I feel like we rarely played this one because it was like it was hard to get all the elements right. One of the big elements for me, though, was the fact that it was just like so wildly. This is another one where it's like Minsk, it's like Sam Rudich, where it's just so wildly personal that playing it's like, you know, like when I was writing the vocals, it's very, I'm yelling the entire time on purpose. It's not like because that was where the register fit. It's because the song was like super personal and super important to me. You know, we would go to snowing practice from Ross and I would drive from the Lehigh Valley to Philly every practice, like once a week for, you know, 2 years. And there was a billboard on the turnpike that said like, "Your sin will find you out," all capital letters.
Think about this.
Like, exclamation point at the end. And I grew up super Catholic and like church every Sunday, and my dad was super Catholic, church every Sunday. Like, we would have to go, he would make us go to church on what are called holy days of obligation in the Catholic Church before school when those would come up like during the year. So like weird days, like All Saints Day. It's just like a random Tuesday in like probably like February or something. And my dad would wake us up at like 5 a.m. and be like, "We got to go to church." And we would all go to church. It was fucked up. This idea of Catholic guilt is talked about a lot, but it was very real in my life. And I feel like my adult life really doesn't start until after my dad died when I was 17. Everything changes. And this song sort of, in a weird way, reflects that, because like my dad dies, and then I'm as a human being, I'm very lost. I tried really hard with, like, I use certain songs as, like, a way to, like, write my life, to try and make myself feel a way that I didn't actually feel, that I wanted to feel. So, like, the chorus of this one, it's like, my dad died, like his dad died, and I know someday that I'll die, which in my head was, like, coming quick. Like, I thought I was going to die at any point, and I was trying to, like, be triumphant about it, but I'm alive. I was just trying to be okay. I was trying so goddamn hard to be okay. This is one of those songs. This one and Shotgun of Beer, just me trying to be okay. It was, you know, for better or worse. Actually, like, I put, like, a lot of myself into it, and it...
Are you talking to us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course we know that.
Oh, I didn't know. I keep a lot of my friendships at arm's length. I don't really know.
John, we went through that whole thing.
Yeah.
John, there were times where I wanted to murder everything, every single one of you. So incredibly much. Like, we went through, like, I can personally say, I think thick and thin together. Like, you know, we went through some super, like, real shit.
Right.
Like, man, I love you. Of course I knew all that.
Yeah, man.
Like, I don't want you to think that I've ever taken any of this for granted. Like, of course, I've always...
Well, I mean, I've loved you for years. I just didn't know if you knew that, like, I used this because this really helped me get through some shit. Or, like, this really helped me, like, try to start working through some shit. This was, like, really important to me.
Of course.
I didn't...
Like, yeah.
I think I've been thinking about this a lot lately, revisiting the record, about how hard it is to put yourself out there like that in a way that is... I don't know, public record. Like, it really was underlined, like, in the past few days, because I've been kind of, like, you know, rewinding the clock on social media. I, like, looked through my Tumblr from around, you know, that time, and my Facebook.
Yeah.
And just thinking about all the shit that I was saying, and how, if I wanted to, anytime, I could go in there and delete all that shit, but you can't. Like, it's out there. And that takes a lot of bravery, I think. And it's something I never did because I couldn't do it. I appreciate you.
Well, you didn't have the voice.
I did. I never.
Damn.
Anyway.
No. There was.
I mean, dude, yes,
we'll
yes,
we'll hug a bunch when this is done.
Yeah.
There was a thing. I was when I went back to school for teaching. They did a long, like a long day. I had like a long class about how they were like, if you do anything in public. Now, parents will find it and use it against you. And I like pulled my teacher, I like pulled my professor aside. I was like, I have an entire band where I talk about how I drink too much and how I'm like terrified of dying and how my family, my dad died and it really upset me. And I don't, how is this going to work? And she's like, you'll just have to tell them that it's all like an act.
I was kidding.
They weren't like, you know, like, you'll just have to tell them that, you know, they knew Algernon was better.
I had to use my feelings because we weren't as good as Algernon.
I mean, dude, yeah, like,
isn't that the...
Yeah, you always, I think the reason we fucking, like, at least for the four of us, put up with all that shit for so long was because we knew none of us were bullshitting.
Yeah.
And, you know, same goes for you, man. Right? That I was always like, John's fucking bringing it all. He's always like,
yeah.
He is like the face of the band, and he's the one like giving everyone who gives a shit about it something to sing about. So
I will say this. I think Snowing on its best night live fucking better than like any fucking band.
High highs.
We were so good.
We were the high
sometimes.
We were so good
I'll
together.
I'll sing my praises. Fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm moving to Connecticut in a couple months. I give a shit.
Yeah. we would play a show, and I just remember just like, it was just like a fucking bulldozer.
Yeah, man.
We were just so good, so loud, and so tight.
There was, if you can find it, there's a hex writer's review for something, but one of the lines in it says, "I feel like you could see this band in the basement and throw beer cans at them and they'd be chill with it."
It happened.
And I was like, yeah, that's like for sure our vibe. Like that's, I don't know, that's just, I always wanted.
Nate mentioned earlier having a chip on our shoulder. I think we always wanted to just like play and be the best band. Not because like we all had some weird like competition thing. It was just like, let's just be fucking great. Like,
and also
just be real. It's
so messy.
Messy? But we're also, my favorite thing about us was like, we were just like real as fuck.
That's
like,
what I mean by messy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean by messy, I mean like fucking.
What the public face of us was us. Like
fucking.
Yeah.
I'm not talking sloppy. I'm not talking like clumsy. I'm talking like messy like that.
I remember Joe telling Chris, who's gone, so maybe I'm relaying a fake story. But we did this 6-week tour together. And it was 1984 and Algernon and Snowing. And Joe would apparently watch us every night, like from the side of the stage, which like, you know, you fucking 6 weeks, like I don't think I watched Algernon more than 7 times. I watched 1984 most nights because they were just like a beat.
The best band.
Yeah. But like, if anything, Algernon was too good and it like hurt. So I didn't want to watch them every night. But like, Joe apparently watched every night, and Chris asked him the one night, like, why do you do this? And he's like, because it's Snowing and they're the best. And it's just like,
that's so nice.
All right, that was real fucking heartwarming. All of that,
yeah.
I really like that. I'm gonna throw it to Kyle real quick. Yeah, I'm gonna throw it to Kyle real quick for some wrap up stuff. I have one last question at the very end, but for now, I'm gonna hand the reins over to Kyle.
Where's Bean? Yeah, I don't know either.
So I feel like this album, like when it came out, it was definitely around, but I feel like there was a point like maybe 2 or 3 years later that I feel like a lot of people discovered it. Did you realize there was a point where like it seemed to be passed around to like another generation or like just more in general and people were connecting with it?
I do think that like we missed the wave we created for ourselves. Like, we broke up right when we probably should have been doubling down, but like we were fucking burnt out. Yeah. Actually, it was a combination of like half of us were burnt out, half of us wanted to keep fucking bulldozering on because of that reason. And I think, I don't know. I know on my part, I wanted to keep moving on, and I was arrogant enough to think that like, well, we'll just break up and start another band and it will work. It didn't fucking work. In hindsight, we should have taken 6 months off. We should have taken a year off. It would have been there for us when we got back. I know Nate wanted to take a break. It wasn't happening. None of us were getting along.
I wanted to either take a break or just call it quits. And I think calling it quits for me was the best bet because I was never going to come back to it with any type of 2020 hindsight vision or anything like that. I knew coming back from that summer tour that, you know, it was different. Everything was different. Dynamic was different. And I wasn't going to bring anything to the table that was helpful. I was in a place where I was being real a big jerk. So
we were all
so
being
I
jerks.
Just, well, I just took my jerkiness to Guacamole instead of y'all.
I personally like yelled at people for the first time on that tour, like in my adult life.
That was your first time?
Yeah, I like never yelled at a friend until that tour.
Well, that,
really?
Like I never gotten full blown yelling.
Damn.
That tour was a lot.
It was stressful. It was
and I don't think we should base how the band broke up on that tour. The band did break up on that tour, but like it's not.
Well,
I tried to take a bus
as a result of that tour.
I tried to take a bus home from Portland, and John told me if I leave, the band's over.
every band also you.
I had it in my cart, a bus, like in my shopping cart on my laptop.
I even put a cart on your lap.
Every band actually, within the year of that tour, every band that was on that tour broke up.
That's true.
1984 and Algernon, like a bunch of dummies, went directly to Europe after that tour.
Yeah, and there are a bunch of stories that they'll tell you, I'm sure, when you get the Parrot Flies episode.
that's probably 100% going to be the
yeah.
That.
I hope it wins because that's the best Algernon record.
Yeah, that is.
It's a thank you. Everyone yeah. fucking says some kind and we both
flies. When I found out people didn't love that one, I was floored.
The funny thing about that one is people complained about Tank's drumming. They're like, it's not technical enough.
They complained about it?
It's like the best part.
They complained about it. I don't even know what joke to make. I can just say they complained about it in a certain voice. And it sounds like they're idiots. They complained about it? Really? That's crazy. It's like when you complain about the people at Five Guys giving you too many fries.
Yeah.
You can just go off.
These fries are too good.
Just throw them out. What are you talking about? Just turn it off.
Salty, delicious fries.
Anyway, can I clarify one thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just about the name of the record.
Hey, where's Bean?
Yeah, the name of the record, where's Bean? No, the name of the record, it comes from something my mom said. Could you wait until after the podcast to eat your fucking
Tell them also about the name of the band.
Oh, okay. So these are the two good stories. Cool. So the name of the record came from my mother and I were in an argument about where I was going in my college career, and started off very well, and I of course started slagging off, and you know, it was just trying to find myself. And she said to me, incredibly frustrated one night, "God damn it, Nate, you could do whatever you wanted to if you wanted to." And I just we took that and reworked it and turned it into I could do whatever I wanted if I wanted, and that's where that came in. And the name of the band came out of John. We were practicing in my
can we parents... go through the first few names, or do we even want to share this?
No, I don't want to do that. I just want to
we played a show as New Hunger.
No, what did I say?
It was a flyer.
This is why we broke up, dude. John's right. John's right, man. Should never agreed to come down here. What a mistake. Darn. We were practicing in my mom's basement. John was driving there. It was snowing out. John and Ross were talking on the phone, and I guess John said to Ross, "Let's call the band Snowy." And we were like, "Yeah, that's next." The name literally came about only because it was snowing outside. And then we were in the basement practicing, and now my Nana was staying with me at the time. She's a wonderful French woman. And she came downstairs to say, "Oh, Tanya, I see you practicing down here, so beautiful. What is the name of your band?" No, name of the band is called Snowing. Snowy? Like okay? And we were like, no, not like cocaine, but whatever. Yeah, that's fine. And then we were introducing everybody in the band, and I was like, this is John. Oh, John, nice to meet you. This is Ross. Oh, this is JR. JR, like Dallas.
I fucking forgot about that.
Yeah, JR.
I forgot about that.
The gas password. Yeah.
There's one element of that story that I want to add that Nate didn't. When Nate said our name was Snowing, Nana said, "Oh no." Oh yeah. No, like cocaine.
Funny, because that's what most people said when I told them the name of our band. We
would just hang out in the basement and do fat lines.
I mean, at that point, it was the last band name available, so
that's true. It was either that or cocaine.
You should have named our band Cocaine.
Oh my god.
Where's Bean?
Must have been a screamo band called Cocaine.
Oh yeah,
there's a screamo band called Heroin.
Yeah. There's that band Coke Bus. They're sick. Yo, who's talking about hardcore?
That 7-inch fuck bar, or it's like fuck bar culture.
Yep, that's good.
That's a good one. Yep.
One of our homies is like real tight with that band, Fernando from Commander Salamander. Yeah.
Honestly, one of my favorite hardcore bands was Punch, and now JR is in a band with fucking Megan.
Oh, I should have said that. I love Punch.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I should have said that too.
Punch and Danger's like single-handedly got me into hardcore in like 2006. For sure.
I also love Dasso.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Oh, some Mark McCoy shit right here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Here's Mark McCoy.
The dude Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
What?
Charles Bronson?
Spaz have a song about him called Hardcore Before Mark McCoy Was Emo Semen.
That's borderline scream out of it.
Yeah.
I want to tell one more, my parting story. When I left.
Are you going to leave right after this?
Yeah, I'm going to leave right after this. When I left my house, I saw my roommate. He's like, oh, where are you going, band practice? I was like, oh, no, actually, I'm not going to do this, like, emo podcast. And he's like, oh, you should tell them all you live with a member of Satia.
I was just going to say.
Oh, shit, yeah.
He's a member of fucking Satia. He's like, fucking.
So he gave me permission to embarrass him. I live with Steve from Satia.
Yeah, well, one time I saw
wonderful landlord and roommate.
One time I saw him at the bar I worked at, and I called him Kevin. Well, he was not happy.
It's his brother who looks exactly like him.
Yeah, well, they look exactly like each other. What am I supposed to do?
Does he own that home?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I live in his home.
Yeah.
Damn. That's crazy.
Off Minor was awesome.
When you don't take out the trash, is he like,
no, no.
What? Oh, so when you don't take out the trash, he's like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, he played drums in Off Minor.
And Algernon for a couple shows.
Yeah, and Algernon for a couple shows.
Oh, I heard the story of that trip. It is wild.
They can tell that one.
Yeah,
the tunnel
story? They'll tell that one in the next episode.
Oh, yeah. I'll do a marionette reenactment of it.
I feel like I wanted to say something like nice and heartfelt. It's, but you know what? The fact that I can't remember it because we're just laughing and kind of drunk probably just sums up Snowing better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I have like one last question for everybody. What is everyone's favorite Snowing song? Just pick one.
Ooh. Wonderwall. JR did not find that funny at all.
JR is under the impression that that's a Snowing song.
Yeah, I was just checking Spotify to make sure. I was like, what Snowing song is that?
JR didn't react at all, so I thought maybe like his AirPods died and he was just like nodding along to everything.
For this question, let's start with JR. JR, what was your favorite Snowing song to play? Do you have one?
I'm going to say Minsk.
You know, to play live, I'm going to say Sam Rudich. That's my shit. I love all the riffs.
Jeff.
I love the chords I play. I get to thrash about, look like a fool, and I think I'm pretty good at playing it. Close second, Spectre Magic.
Because we stopped playing that one after a while.
Yeah, because I can't play the fucking end of it.
Oh.
It's too hard.
I remember writing Spectre Magic with you, Nate, at the Model Home. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I have to, like,
rewrote you and I, man.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was sick.
That ending
was
incredible.
I love that ending.
You did a great job.
Hell yeah.
Pumping. Pumping. I just really, I feel like all the pieces fit super well in that one. Like, vocally, musically, lack of arms. Like, it all sort of worked.
Ross?
Mine is Big Weed.
Yeah. You say Big Weed?
Yeah, Big Weed. Sorry, JR.
Ross. The only song I don't play on.
Yeah, I'm sorry, JR. Well, that's legitimately my favorite thing I've ever.
Hell yeah, that's what's up, dude.
I also, like, man, I love Superchunk.
That is a Superchunk.
It's a Superchunk.
Very
Superchunk. If y'all want to go listen to Iron On by Superchunk, it's on Here's Where the Strings Come In. You will wonder how Mac McCom has not sued us. They ripped off of that song.
I'm pretty sure he knows when not to sue people who have nothing.
Yeah.
I will say, as somebody who didn't participate in the writing or recording of Big Weed, it is a fantastic song. I love that song a lot.
It was fun to play. It's power chords.
I like
Nate solos.
We took a while. It took a while to come up with the, after the second chorus, like that bridge part, which is like, I can remember writing it. It's among my favorite parts of any Snowing song ever. The part where it's like palm muted,
mm-hmm.
and we do like the different timing and stuff.
And you obliquely reference Four Loko, Camo
Cans. No,
it's not Four Loko.
It's Bush.
Oh, I always thought that was about Four Loko.
Oh.
Just knowing the things we drank together.
You obliquely reference
Four Loko.
No, Camo Cans. Bush used to sell. So when we would buy beer at Wegmans by Chris Reject's house, Bush was the cheapest six pack.
The neighbors, as we called it.
At the neighbors, yes. Bush was the cheapest six pack. It was like something like $4 for a six pack, but they, when hunting season came around, they would have camo cans because we're in Pennsylvania and people hunt. So
I'm crushed. That's not about four.
No, it's about some prepaid phones, camo cans, and broken bones.
Hey Kyle, what's your favorite snowing song?
Minsk.
Mine is Methuselah Rookie Card.
Whoa,
that's in the top three for me too.
One, it's my favorite Simpsons reference. Yeah. Out of the catalog. And
enough at the final snowing show, we forgot to play it.
Just straight up.
Yeah, we forgot to play it.
Straight up forgot.
It's on the set list.
Yeah.
It was shit.
We were just trying to fuck out of there, man.
It was a rough night.
Yeah. Both reunion shows were the most
incredibly rough.
The most snowing reunion shows that you could possibly have. One, we're rushed off the stage to the point where the house is turning on the lights, turning off the stage monitors, and bouncers are running on stage to turn off our amps. The second, in which a fire alarm goes off and we have to evacuate an entire mall.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And then we are lectured by some mummy from 1985. We are dressed down by someone who was around when, I don't know, Flying Nun was relevant. I guess that makes him cool. Just completely humiliated and then expected to perform to the best of our abilities.
We did great.
We played in a mall that was actually a flea market and it had a professional wrestling museum at the time.
Yeah,
which it's very dear, near and dear to mine, Joe.
Yeah, and then Beerus Sama, the god of destruction from Dragon Ball Super, shut the whole thing down.
Hey guys, you know who played our last show? It's Jeans.
Yeah, it's true. My favorite thing about the I will just say, not that this is gonna make the podcast. My favorite thing about the reunions, both of them, although both shows were literal shit shows, at least we're all like. Friends again.
That shit was tight.
At least we had a fucking great time.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful. The practices were fun as shit. Fuck, dude, before the first one, we played that Neil Young cover at the show.
And nobody cared.
God.
Because we just kept playing it at practice.
Yeah.
Because we were just like drunk and happy. And
we covered Don't Cry No Tears by Neil Young. And
Nick
I got
sang
to sing it.
Yeah.
It was fucking sick. Man.
We covered Laid by James and made Chris Reject sing it.
Oh, he was so upset.
He did a terrible job.
Well, there was a precedent to it, but Chris was just not ready for it.
Precedent. Like he was in the band and got kicked out for doing it.
No. I used to drive in his car. He would drive in his car and sing Laid so loud.
He had that mixtape that had it on.
He had the mixtape
that had Joyride by Built to Spill on it.
Yeah.
It had
But he would sing Laid and he would do all the drums and he would like count it and he would turn it up super loud. And Chris has a really bad habit of tailing cars like super close. And he'd just be like tailing a car like less than a car length away and just screaming the lyrics of James Laid. His bed is on fire with passion and love. And it's just like, we're like
playing that long drum roll part on the steering wheel.
You know, for that show, we should have put a car in front of him.
And we're right behind the car.
Probably would have remembered the fucking lyrics.
And then at the show, we didn't tell him about the song. We pulled him on stage, and he was so upset.
He would like smile and then turn behind us and give us this, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what the fuck are you doing? Oh my God. It was great. No, but I will say for that, the practice. This is leading up for those reunion shows before I said like yes to any of it. When we were talking to my dad about it, I was like, I don't know, we only have 3 months. We haven't played in like 4 years or something like that. And we were just gonna be sloppy and shitty and I wanted it to be good. And he was like, well, what kind of band were you when you were a band? And I was like, well, we were loud and sloppy and shitty. And he was like, they'll get their money's worth. What are you worried about? And I was like, oh fuck, yeah. Good boy, Pop.
Those shows and practices, like, I'm really glad we did them because
yeah,
I don't know, we'd all grown apart a little bit, came back together.
Yeah,
it's great. I see John once or twice a week. We're in a band.
Yeah,
we watch wrestling.
I see you every week.
Mm-hmm. JR,
and I get to see fucking Kevin DeFranco every week.
We love
you.
Yeah,
you have to see Kevin DeFranco every week.
I said instead of seeing you guys every week, I see Kevin DeFranco every week.
Oh my God! Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And no one talks to Bean.
Queen.
He FaceTimes me all the time.
It's a drummer, Phil. It's a drummer.
The second reason that Methuselah is my favorite Snowing song is that the outro is fucking gnarly and stellar, which is a convenient segue into this outro. This was like honestly like 100% like a dream of the podcast, and it like means the world that y'all came on and talked about it. We really appreciate it. It was amazing.
Really good stuff too. Like, we took lifts over here. It was a 5-minute trip. So
we took lifts over here. That's why you like that?
No, I mean, I'm just saying it's nice that it meant a lot, but it was just like so easy.
It was a, it meant a lift ride. Yeah. Keep talking what you're talking about. I'm sorry.
Nate's missing time right now.
It was the most meaningful lift ride that anyone's ever taken for us.
No, but it's kind of like to me, my dude. All right. Keep talking. I'm sorry. So, you're happy we were on here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kyle, do you have any words?
This record means a lot to a lot of people, and a lot of people didn't get to see y'all. And I feel like records of this time weren't documented very well. And I'm glad that we are able to help document it a little more.
Yeah, can I just say to anybody who's listening to this thing, that is wild to me and very cool. I'm incredibly humbled and grateful for that because, I don't know, when we were doing it, it just felt like something we were doing. And it felt like something we were doing just to do it. I don't know, to be 10 years down the line, like, we've all moved super far past that, but it's still just... I'm happy that it's all like, I'm happy we can all like fucking get together and talk about it. That it's not a thing where, I don't know, we all have to do separate Skypes and talk shit on each other. We just love each other. This is tough.
Aww.
First band that I'm like, it's weird because I was in a high school band that my mom, it's her favorite band, and she refuses to like acknowledge the fact that I've been in other bands since. So that's a weird thing that happens in my life. Audio recording club. But
also on Spotify.
Man, I was gonna make a CCR joke.
Oh, but Sewing for me is the first band where I ever actually like Sewing in my head is like the first real band I was ever in. And it's still like outside of maybe like Bad Heaven now, which is like my fucking baby. Like Sewing is the most important band I ever did, and I there's so many things about my life that would be different if we didn't do this band. So
there are decisions I made while in Snowing that if I hadn't made them, I'd probably be in a much different spot in my life, and spot that I'm at in my life, I wouldn't trade for nothing.
I'll echo those sentiments. It means a lot to me that people that this meant a lot to people.
I didn't realize it was. I'm sorry to cut you off, man. I interrupted you. What were you saying?
Well, even when we weren't in the valley, but like when we were doing the record, like we sold out a pre-sale. Mm-hmm. Like the pre-sale was like over 300, it was like possibly 500 records.
Huh.
And we like that was a big thing. Like we sold out a pressing of like 2,000 super quick.
That's so, wait, many, of what, that's when? So many records. Like
when? What are you talking about?
The full.
Oh, for real? When we did?
Yeah.
Yo, I was a junior in college then. I didn't know shit. Like.
Yeah, no, I was living in the valley, so like I was working with Chris, and like I was at the house every day, and we were packing up the records. Like I remember Ross and I went to go see Punch before we put out the record.
And Vaccine.
And Vaccine. Ooh. Sick show. Yeah. In Brooklyn. But we
and Mama Priya.
You were talking to someone in Punch about what record was that? That was their second record.
Yeah.
They were talking about how like they had like a stack of pre-orders that was like high. It was as high as they were stacked up. And I remember thinking like, wow, that's insane. And then we did the pre-order for the Snowing record. And it was the fucking same thing. Like it was so, there were so many goddamn records that it was like higher than Chris and I. And
not higher than me, baby.
Not higher than
Yo, what's up?
But no, it was like a really, it was just a really, it was a crazy time. I remember thinking like, just, I don't know, it was like, I just remember doing it and thinking to myself like, we're doing, like being at Chris's house, getting the records assembled, putting out the pre-order and thinking like we're doing something important, like we're doing something real, like this is something people want. And it made me really think of, like, I don't know, I think it really like colored my sort of my entire like outlook on like DIY and how I want to put out records now as an adult and like shit like that.
It also I like to think about how like lucky we were that it caught on and how relatively easy it was to achieve the success we did, because now I stopped playing music for a little while after Snowing. I was kind of, I don't know, disillusioned is probably a good word, I don't know, I thought maybe this was over, maybe I would just get a job and, you know,
right,
try to be an adult. But you know, now that I've started playing again in the past 3 years, being in a band's hard. It's hard to get people to care.
Yeah,
it was a shock to me when we would play shows for 5 people in the city we lived in. Right now it's just like, shit, like, why do people do this to themselves?
And again, we're also playing in Bad Heaven, the band that I front. No one comes to see.
But I guess I just wanted to say that makes me appreciate it even more. I'm really happy with that. A lot of people. It meant a lot to me. I tried to not take it for granted at the time. I probably did.
Yeah.
In retrospect,
yeah,
now.
10 years ago.
Fucking children.
It was the best.
It was great.
I definitely took it for granted, I feel like, and I regret that for sure. Because to Ross's point, like, the popularity of it all was something that was like super easy to take for granted, and now I'm like, damn, it's fucking hard to get anybody to give a shit about any music that anybody does. So
yeah, and you're in a band with Thump from Punch.
You're on Death Wish.
And unfortunately, Kevin DeFranco. No, but like, also, like, your record came out on Death Wish, like, that's a big deal.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, it's,
can I just say, I don't know where anybody voted on this? Can I just say that, yeah, I just thought, voted. Can I just say that I went in completely blind?
We didn't,
that
we won against a band who campaigns to win.
Can I just say that I thought that someone just wanted to do it? And that learning now that people voted just makes me wonder how many, what was it on Reddit?
It was Reddit, yeah. And Twitter, basically.
So my mom's got a lot of Reddit accounts. Yeah. Mom's probably got a lot of Reddit accounts that are unaccounted for, and I'm gonna have to rein her in.
Yeah.
My fiance just got home. She has a Snowing shirt that I'm actually really jealous of.
It's a good one.
Twin Peaks one?
No, it's the blue one. That's not the fuck your emotional bullshit one.
Yes,
the blue one. Yo, blue one. JR, you did the fucked up face, pink letters. Oh,
that one.
That's the best one.
I like the one of Nate's face. That's the Marilyn Manson ripoff.
Yeah.
Well, that was the most recent.
Yeah.
That was from the reunion.
No, anything that has to do with me is garbage. The best one is that powder blue one with the fucking face on it and the blue letters on it, or the pink letters. Pink
I
letters.
Like the Twin Peaks one, probably the best, and the other one was the Smiths Meet His Murder one.
Tom P printed the face ones, right?
Yeah, but we set the wrong size.
What about the my literal least favorite shirt ever?
No, let's talk about that.
Snowing hair one.
Oh, yeah.
Where it Snowing is written in different people's hair.
Oh.
I wish I could say it was on like some weird drugs or something at the time, and that's why. I don't know where the fuck that came from, man.
I was just like, no. No, and then Jared was like, yeah, it was already printed.
It's really good when you have someone you know who runs the company and will just print merch for you without telling you.
I mean, no,
we'd sell shirts. I'd be like, what the fuck is that shirt?
No, it's not, because there was this one Snowing shirt where it's 3 peanut characters that look cute.
That one's good.
And I am Pigpen.
Yeah.
And then so Snowing broke up. And I went to Glockamora, and Zach from Glockamora was like, guess what shirt we're going to make? It's going to be the same thing, but with us and your pig pen. That followed me for so long.
That shirt bummed me out so much. The Glockamora one? Oh, my God.
It bummed you out? Really? That's too bad. On the back, did it say bummed out or something? I don't know. like unbelievable. And then, you know, Zach would tell me, like, you know, I hope people don't start to, like, they wanted to go away from the emo shit too, and that's why I was like, yeah, I'm on board with this, I'll join this band. And Zach was like, you know, I hope people don't think we're like snowing because you're in the band. And I was like, well, they're gonna think it now.
I'm gonna amend my favorite. It was the goat in the pentagram. It looked like a black metal shirt.
Oh,
it said snowing,
one.
And on the back it said "fuck Philly, hail
Satan."
Yeah. also, the eyes in the pentagram were googly.
When they're googly eyes on a goat.
That's right. That's right. All right.
Pennsylvanian hunger.
We took that on a tour, and I remember on that tour, kids.
Oh,
I'm saying kids, but like
teenagers.
Yeah, the teenagers that came to see snowing were just like, I don't think I can buy this. I don't think my parents.
That was on a Midwest tour.
Yeah, it was a Midwest tour.
Back before weed was super cool, so we had to change the name. Yo, I'm making fun of you, JR. What's up, my dude?
Actually, you're kind of making fun of me.
Who are we making fun of? Man, I'll make fun of any of y'all. I don't care. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I'm sure this is probably going to be a fucking nightmare.
I hope this was okay.
I was just like,
so,
to
a lot of our episodes are 3 hours, so it's fine.
Yeah.
A lot of your episodes are 3 hours?